the budgets and check whether have they done well, have they failed somewhere, and so that we can also get explanations mm-hmm. as the people that have to ensure that we are playing oversight to this, and the people that are sent to Parliament by the ordinary citizens of South Africa, we have to report that what is this department doing. I know that in the last few weeks we have been dealing with our expropriation bill, but because we have to do this and there are time frames to this, so this entire week we'll be dealing with the annual performance plans. With those few words, honorable members, minister and your team, you are all welcome. If the minister is here, I'm not sure. I heard that there is a new acting DG. I think she will formally introduce the new acting DG to us. But as much as we don't know him or her, you are welcome to this meeting. Any apologies, Tabi?
No apologies on my side, Chair. It's only Khadija and Mr. Denison.
Okay, Mr. Denison and Ms. Khadija are not
recording in progress
today, as they have to attend to their religious holiday, and we wish them all the best. Ms. Nola Martinez is also attending this week, so she's also not part of the meeting, and couldn't get an acting secretary. Ms. Tabi will do all that today. We also have an apology from Deputy Shaw, so she is also not here. We also have an apology from Honorable First Aiden, who also indicated that she won't be able to join this meeting. So those are the few apologies that we have. Can you fly to the agenda? And I think it's over to the department now. Thank you.
Jefferson, good morning, and thank you very much. We have posted an apology for the minister on the chat of the meeting. First, I need to introduce myself. My name is Alec Moeni. I've been appointed the acting director general of the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure. Chair Minister is completing a session with a parliamentary a cabinet committee meeting, and once she's done, I think she would then be able to join the meeting. But Chair, today we are presenting before the committee the annual performance plan of the department for the financial year we are currently in, and to look at the targets as well as the expected performance outcomes. As Chair may be aware, the department has previously began the review process of our own processes as well as our capacity to be able to address the identified shortcomings that have been identified. And we are now in that rebuilding phase, and we have begun to see the green shoots under my predecessor. And we have also begun to see quite a stabilization around a number of program areas. We have also looked at and did quite a deep dig in terms of what is contained in the Auditor General's reports and the review thereto. And we looked at the audit action plans and the implementation to make sure that in the main we begin to address the shortcomings around repeat findings, but even beyond that, to look at the specific recommendations the AG had been providing to us and the guidance and value add that has been given, with a viewpoint of us strengthening our own processes, and also beyond that to improve on the control environment, and also to address the shortcomings in our process flows, which have impacted negatively previously on all the likes. So the APP we have purchased this time around looks at those realities and seeks to address those shortcomings. But importantly, it also seeks to build on what has been firmly established previously. And it also seeks to improve on what we have done previously and to set realistic targets owing to the current capacity the department is having and the current challenges, and to also take that into account. With your permission, Chair, I would like to invite my two colleagues, Mr. Lwazi Mahlangu, to present on the APP itself and on the issue of the appropriation and the budget, to invite the CFO of the department, Mr. Mandla Sithole, to follow suit. I would, with your indulgence and permission, Chair, hand over to Mr. Mahlangu.
Thank you very much, Mr. Moemi, the Chairperson. I will do the introduction to the APP and the SP, and Mr. Mahlangu and the CFO will then follow thereafter. Chairperson, comments on slide number three, number four. Number four gives the index. We will cover a background and the strategic overview of the annual performance plan in the context of the five-year strategic plan. We'll then move over to the program performance information. We'll cover some of our strategic risks that pertain to achieving of our performance targets. And then we'll conclude with the budget for the DPW as well as the PMTE over the year ahead, as well as the MTF. Chairperson, moving on to slide number six. I want to, again...
Acting, did you? Apologies. Welcome, Mr. Moemi. No, one, there's nothing that we see on the screen. That is the first thing. But two, I want to put this on record. Yes, we received yesterday the apology of the DM, though we didn't receive the one of the minister. I understand, I think DG has said that he has put it there. But I think it must be noted that it's not good that both the minister and the deputy minister are not part of the meeting.
Now, Honourable Chairperson,
you are in.
Morning and greetings to you and the Honourable Members. I was just wrapping up one point in a cabinet committee, but I couldn't switch over when the president was replying, so I was a few minutes late. So my apology for that. There is an apology for the deputy minister that she's not available today.
Yes, we received the apology.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Chief.
No, I was seriously concerned that both of you are not part of the meeting. I'm happy that you are here then. Can then they continue? Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, I just want to confirm that the slide presentation is on the screen. In fact, I'm not sure who's going to be beaming that. Yes, I see it is there. Colleague, if you can please go to slide number six. That's where we are. Thank you. Thank you very much. So, Chairperson and members of the committee, once again, I thank you to Mr. Moemi, and I'll just go straight to slide number six. And what we are saying is that the strategic plan and annual performance plan is based on the seven priorities of government to which we contribute as a department to a greater extent with respect to economic transformation and job creation, as well as priority three, consolidating the social wage. We also make indirect contributions to priorities four and five. And of course, priority number six is also essential to the department in creating a capable state. And of course, with respect to a better Africa and better world, we make an indirect contribution. Our APP, Chairperson, is also sourced from the Economic Recovery and Reconstruction Plan, where you have a number of work streams. And the DPW chairs the infrastructure work stream, and we make a significant contribution through the Economic Recovery and Reconstruction Plan with respect to this particular work stream, as well as the work stream pertaining to the green economy. Then recently, our plans have also been affected by the 10 key initiatives approved by Cabinet pursuant to the Cabinet Lekotla earlier this year. And I move on to the next slide, slide number seven, where we talk about these 10 separate Lekotla priorities. And on the left, we have those priorities which directly relate to the DPWI, which is to massify job creation and infrastructure, the structural reforms and ease of doing business, leveraging public procurement, digitalization, as well as contribution to basic services. And on the right are those which pertain to the department in an indirect way. Chairperson, the APP makes reflection to those on the left, where DPW contributes to five areas of the cabinet priorities, and they specifically relate to DPW. The first being, of course, massifying job creation and infrastructure, where EPWP remains a key job creation mechanism for the country. And also in addition to this, in the role of our own construction and maintenance projects, DPW is optimizing investment in infrastructure through ISA in an effort to improve the rate and quality of infrastructure investment and delivery. Then we also have dozens of priority strategic integrated projects that have been gazetted. And some of these SIPs are belonging to DPWI, in fact, and the first one being Small Harvest Project. And then we move over to the Rural Bridges Project, which is very important in the context of the recent floods. We also have the PV and water savings projects, which are critical given that we are a water-scarce country and we have challenges with respect to energy stability. Then we also have a comprehensive urban renewal program and the Selvacop project, where we're creating a precinct for government headquarters in the Tswana area. And then DPW has also adopted what it calls a refurbish, operate and transfer program for the maintenance of government buildings, and a number of flagship projects will be introduced in this regard during the current year, which include the Civitas building, the Telkom Towers building, as well as Public Works House, which is across the road from our headquarters. Chair, moving on to the structural reforms and ease of doing business, the DPW is driving the construction industry recovery plan, which is aligned to the economic reconstruction and recovery plan and the National Infrastructure Plan 2050. And we recognize the need to have a construction sector, and appreciating that it's highly labor intensive, to be able to deliver and stimulate the economy through this particular initiative. And undertakings are currently being developed with both the private sector as well as other public entities. We also acknowledge the role we play with respect to leveraging public procurement in strengthening local procurement, as well as development of SMMEs to local supplier industries. And then in the department, we are running our own ERP project to ensure we digitize the business with respect to basic services, and the delivery of water and sanitation to the country includes DPWI's own client departments. And in an effort to reduce costs and the burden on local municipalities and ESCOM, the department has an extensive shared saving program, which it seeks to introduce to reduce water and electricity demand on state-owned buildings, as well as to reduce costs in this regard. So, Chairperson, I won't go any further in this regard, except to note that with reducing violent crime, we are making an indirect contribution where we are refurbishing vacant buildings to be used as shelters on behalf of the Department of Social Development. We are also using state-owned buildings to create awareness with respect to GBV and with respect to food security. EPWP is also playing that role with respect to its contribution to the social net, and 1 million work opportunities being created each year. And I move on to the external environment, Chairperson, simply to note that we are operating in a very strained environment with a strained fiscal matrix and budget cuts that we've had to deal with in the last few years. And that's the kind of environment in which the department has been compelled to work within. Now, coming back to the presentation, Chairperson, the next slide, slide number nine, our constitutional mandate, as you were, Chairperson, I reiterate that public works is a concurrent mandate, national, provincial, and local government, and a mandate of concurrent competency. We're also affected by Section 25 of the Constitution, which talks to land expropriation. With respect to other areas of our legislation, of course, in a general way, Section 9, Section 41, as well as Section 95 and Section 217 of the Constitution are pertinent to the environment in which we operate. Moving on to slide 10, IAMA is the main flagship piece of legislation to ensure competent immovable asset management, and it pertains to both national and provincial government. We also have the Infrastructure Development Act, which is regulating the coordination of public infrastructure development of significant social importance. And we have a number of other pieces of legislation, least of being the Land Affairs Act, which determines valuations for properties being dispensed with by the department. And we have a whole raft of legislation. First of all, the Council for the Built Environment Act, as well as six pieces of legislation which organize the built environment professions. And then finally, the Construction Industry Development Board Act, which establishes the CIDB, as well as provides for the regulation, as well as development of the construction industry by that particular organ of state. Moving on from there, Chairperson, slide number 11 is our bread and butter. I won't repeat those things, the vision, mission, and value statements. But I'll go quickly to the slide number 12, which talks to the external and internal environments of the department. As I mentioned earlier, that we have operated under a very strained fiscal matrix, and EPWP is has been very important in providing a contribution to the social net. But we've had a number of challenges and a strained fiscal environment in which to operate. But one must also add that DPW, even under a strained environment, has often failed to spend all of its budget. We've had underspending, which will be dealt with in the second part of the presentation. So to a certain extent, the tight fiscal matrix has been of limited impact to DPW due to our failure to completely spend our budget. With respect to the internal environment, Chairperson, Mr. Moemi has mentioned earlier on the initiatives being undertaken within the department to ensure that we establish the foundation of a high-performance organization. And I'd just like to touch on the first aspect of the internal environment, which is the 10 principles of the 10-point plan, which we have brought about in order to support the functioning in the department. The first being the establishment of a change management program. And Chairperson, I want to mention that we've prioritized certain areas of our business in order to improve the overall performance, the responsiveness in the department to improve the audit outcomes, specifically with regard to the management and expenditure of projects, our construction projects, the one I mentioned, where we underspend, and that has a direct impact on the performance of the construction industry, the management of unscheduled maintenance, which is in some respects out of control, responding to breakages when they occur, rather than having a planned maintenance program, and the management of private leases, which is often astronomical in cost, as well as irregular in nature, due to the fact that they are run on a month-to-month basis. And the poor performance in all of these areas are mainly attributed to a culmination of various governance and systematic weaknesses, and as well as deficiencies in proper asset lifecycle management, capacity, organizational culture, and historic operating and funding models. To address all of these, Chairperson and members of the committee, the department will continue to implement and prioritize the finalization of these 10 key strategic initiatives during the year ahead, 2022-23, aimed at advancing the organization to achieve acceptable levels of performance, responsiveness, and service delivery. And I want to mention these 10, and the first item under the internal environment. The minister has introduced the charter in the department, which is part of the APP, where senior management commit to implementation in the year ahead, including these 10 interventions, which I will state. The first being a change management program that seeks to bring about a capable and ethical DPW located in constitutional values. In fact, this is led by the deputy minister, and it seeks to introduce a new organizational culture in the department under recognition that we need to ensure that all our staff are committed to the goals of the department and the goals of government. The second being a service delivery improvement program, which talks to the one of the outcomes of the department, which I will refer to on the next slide, and that refers to Matupile principles. Thirdly, is to embark on a implementation of a service delivery model and business process management that is based on the infrastructure delivery management system. This is the operating model of the department, in essence, without which we can't operate. It's the infrastructure delivery management system. Fourth is to implement our ICT system and digitize the business. First is to introduce the macro service delivery model, where we define the relationship between the head office and our 11 operating regions, and we ensure that we have a proper governance and line of sight into our regions. this also includes the important development as well as a resolution of the role of the PMTE in the department and how the PMTE fits into the macro delivery model of the department. Six is to introduce an ethics and compliance as well as a consequence management unit in the department to ensure that we enforce the expected standards of behavior. Seven is to respond to our failures to construct construction projects on time and in budget by introducing a contract management and contract monitoring capability. Number eight is to complete an organizational-wide skills assessment to determine the current skills mix and whatever interventions are necessary in the department to ensure that we have the right kind of people to respond to our mandate and to optimize service delivery. And nine is to appreciate that management is in need of assistance with respect to strategy, with respect to budgeting, with respect to planning, with respect to risk management, and to introduce the kind of partnership with the National School of Government to bring these skills within the organization. And then finally, is to focus on the attainment of a clean audit. All of these nine principles are required to converge into a clean audit. And we have, in fact, improved our audit outcome year on year. We are now focusing on our leasing in environment, which is providing certain challenges. It is likely that in the year ahead, DPW will achieve a clean audit as a result of the changes in the audit approach with respect to EPWP. So all of these principles are required to converge in a higher level of performance as well as a clean audit. So Chair, I want to mention that our plan is based on all of these principles and all of these interventions. And these initiatives are not new plans or projects, but they tend focus areas aimed at addressing what are known chronic institutional failures to improve the quality of service in the department. The principles, they also seek to embed a culture of service delivery in the department and a performing department. Certainty about the direction the department is going in, its stability and efficiency of operations, and to create an ethical and capable department aligned to the first priority, priority one of government that talks to the establishment of a capable state. So this is what it's about, Chairperson. And let me then move on to the next slide before I hand over to the presenters, slide number 14. I want to mention, Chair, that all of this converges into the outcomes on slide number 14. That we have seven outcomes. These seven outcomes are related directly to the seven priorities of government. They really talk to creating a resilient DPW, which I've spoken about through the 10 principles, to ensure we create that platform of a high-performing organization. And second is integrated planning and coordination, is to accept that public works is a concurrent function, that planning, that across the spheres of government, together with the nine provincial departments of public works, with local government, with COCTA, is critical to ensure that we give effect to the goals and objectives of the one plan, as well as the need for us to create a single view of service delivery. Number three is sustainable infrastructure investment, which talks largely to what ISA does and the coordination work that ISA does in order for the department to coordinate infrastructure delivery and increase economic growth. Four is the productive efforts. This is really the mandate of what is the PMTE, is to manage the portfolio with a productive strategic intent in mind to enable better services. Five is to transform the built environment through the CIADB, through the CBE, the six built environment professions. Six is to optimize job opportunities, among others, through EPWP. And seven is dignified client experience. This is an appreciation that we provide the infrastructure through which our client departments deliver public services. This is also linked to what I referred to earlier to our service delivery improvement program, where we create proper service delivery standards and service delivery charters, and we meet the expectations and the quality of the buildings we provide to our client departments. So, Chair, I'd like to, on that note, hand over to Mr. Mahlangu to give that background. But our plans are really based, and our strategy is based on these seven outcomes, which are linked to the seven priorities of government. So let me hand over to Mr. Mahlangu and the CFO will follow with respect to the budget. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Mr. Mahlangu.
Yes, morning, Chairperson. Apologies, I was kicked out to Hotspot. I'm back. Apologies for that technical glitch. Morning, Chairperson, members of the committee, Minister, DM in absentia, Ting DG and Exco members. I'm just going to build on the presentation or the opening remarks by the acting DG and Mr. Faisal. There are 7 outcomes in the department that we've developed. I'm not going to go into detail, Chair, because I think the presentation was circulated, but I was just going to highlight a few things I think that is of that we're concentrating on this year, also linking to the opening remarks of the acting DG and Mr. Faisal in tears. So the outcome one on resilient, ethical, capable is responding to the external environment, some of the areas where one, we are looking at the changes in the global space. And one of the things I think that's coming through now again is the issue around the lockdown in China, 45 cities, over 370 million people affected. And there's a lot of shipment that's also affecting. I think that may also find itself in spreading into the country. So we are saying, focusing on that, we are building on how resilient the department will be in responding to those external shocks. And this basically speaks to that outcome or the external environment, where we're looking at one, capacity issues. We're also looking at how we also improve our performance, doing things differently, how we also re-channel as also reprioritize funding, especially the budget and how we spend on it, as well as looking at, because we had to operate remotely and outside the office space, we're also looking at automating our business processes, as well as providing some business solutions as part of digitization process. So these are basically going to be compressed or consolidated into a balanced scorecard, so that we then measure in terms of the level of the balanced scorecard, which of these components is giving rise to some of the internal challenges that we face. So the resilient, ethical, and capable outcome with all these KPIs will then respond to those matters, feeding into the gap identified externally and internally. Next slide. The next slide then breaks it down into the quarterly target. So Chairperson and members of the committee, for every outcome, we will see that there will be 2 types of tables. The one table will speak generally about the minister's delivery agreements, what is the 5-year strategic outcome of the department, and which government priority it speaks to in terms of the 6 administration, and how we have developed the KPIs to drive all these priorities and ministers' agreement, and then how we then develop the outer years, which are MTAF, medium-term expenditure framework, the 3-year outer years towards the five-year strategic. So that's the first table you'll see. The second table then takes the KPIs, which is what is showing now, takes the KPIs and breaks them down in this particular financial year on how we are going to manage the quarterly breakdown of these targets. Chair and members, also just to highlight, if you look at there are some components, I think we've discussed this in the past, there are some areas where you'll find that there are no quota targets at an APP level. Now, the reason for that is that our APP is structured in such a way, because we've applied what we call the theory of change or outcomes approach. Our APP is pitched at an output level, tangible or intangible services that we render or that we, so it's pitched at that. Now, you will find that some tangible aspects of it or outputs cannot be reflected in a particular quarter, because there is a build-up process or activities towards that output. So where you find that there are no quota targets, they are basically process or activity driven, and those are driven with its own targets at an operational plan and leading to eventually the output, which is then reflected in the APP. When we then come to the portfolio committee on a quarterly basis to present performance, we will see, we will show that, yes, there was no quarter one target at an APP as we presented. However, here is progress towards that output that we are moving towards, even if it's reflected in the fourth quarter. So the, from a reporting point of view, there won't be gaps, but these gaps at an APP simply reflect activities that are expressed in our operational plan. So I just thought I should just raise that so that it's not seen as if there's nothing happening. So when you present, we'll do that. Next slide. Next slide then speaks to outcome two. I think acting DG and DDG highlighted the areas of how we also integrate with other government departments. And there was a section on the GIAMA, there was a section on the constitutional section 25, which basically talk about the expropriation bill. And there's also other acts that also speak to land and stuff. So this then speaks to an integrated planning and coordination where we engage other government departments in discharging our function. And the first one being the National Infrastructure Development Plan, or the National Infrastructure Plan that will be developed. So here with the with technical MINMEC and MINMEC and other role players within the space of other government space, where we then engage in the development of a sector plan. And then those sector plans will then be reported on a quarterly basis or when there are meetings, so that we then see the extent to which we coordinate and also deliver on infrastructure. And beyond that is also to look at how we manage stakeholders, moving them towards a common vision and an interest as stipulated in the NDP, as well as these various pieces of legislation. So we're basically moving into that. And then there's also strategic integrated projects that we also deal with, where now various stakeholders that also need to. So these are basically talking about how we can integrate and coordinate all the inputs with a common vision towards our NDP targets. And then also for special justice, we're then dealing with the issues around land and also issues around release of land for socioeconomic, but working also together with other client departments or other stakeholders such as your public bodies in the space of EPWP, integrating and coordinating their efforts towards meeting that 5 million target. So this basically speaks of that. Next slide then is the breakdown of these indicators, Chair and honorable members. Next outcome, next slide. The next outcome, Chair, speaks of sustainable infrastructure. I'll split this into two. One, it talks about infrastructure through ESA, Infrastructure South Africa, where I think from a coordination point of view, which has also been expressed, that we're looking at infrastructure as a percentage of GDP, and the breakdown is also driving into the participation of private sector and government together to drive the economy and also leverage on infrastructure to bring about change in the economic growth. So this basically speaks to that. The second component of it speaks internally into the department, where we also running our own projects through our construction project management branch. And then it also looks at what will be the overall contribution of our own into this world bigger picture of infrastructure as a country. So this is also, so on the one part, we are coordinating the country. The second aspect is within DPW space itself, how are we also contributing using and leveraging on our procurement fund and our mandate of constructing and servicing other client departments in relation to our construction projects. Next slide. Then the next slide breaks down these indicators, Chairperson and honorable members, in terms of the quarterly, that when we come with them, we'll present what is our progress in relation to the targets that we have set, taking into consideration the changes and also the constraints in terms of the resources that we was highlighted in the external environment. Next slide. The next slide then speaks to the core business of the department now in terms of the productive asset, which is the outcome. And this is where we're breaking it down to look at the entire environment of public works, the business of it, from the leasing portfolio, construction, facilities management, release of land, that is from an investment point of view, to the delivery of those projects. So if you will, you are basically looking at the asset life cycle from your planning, acquisition, operate and maintain, and then dispose. So it's basically encompassing all of those. So we're looking from the leasing in terms of the private sector as part of our component of the leasing or acquisition type of acquisition in terms of leasing or provision of sovereign solution, accommodation solution, but also looking at how we also identify certain sectors such as your security cluster on how we move them from a private sector for security reasons into government-owned and state-managed properties so that at least we also minimize exposure to external risks of security aspects. So that's what this indicator then speaks to, the reduction in private leases. We're also looking at within the basket of our leases, we also look at how we realize savings as we enter into new contracts, and then also where we can also increase some rentals or look at the revenue that can be generated in those facilities, which will also contribute to the fiscal and partly also a component of that contributing to the maintenance aspect of those facilities so that we reduce reliance on the fiscal, but also the asset itself should generate enough to actually maintain itself. And then also the release of land, which I also spoke to about in terms of your socio-economic infrastructure or socio-economic imperatives of the state. Next slide is a continuation of this productive asset, where we're also looking at the asset register. Now we're working together with national and provincial to look at a comprehensive asset register and also to give an indication of what is owned by the state, which will also serve as an indicator of the health office, the financial health of an organization or of the state in relation to its assets, management of assets. And then the condition assessment from a facilities management point of view is also looking at the components that we also maintain, and then as well as looking at the conditions of these assets to then make it determination of whether we continue with these assets given the extent of their condition or we dispose of such assets because they are now a burden to the state. So these are basically from an FM point of view also looking at those components. So you can actually see from an investment point of view, from a release of land as part of disposal, from a management of leases in terms of portfolio management and property management, as well as facilities management aspect of it, managing the workspaces and officials operating within, also bringing in elements of occupational health and safety. And I think that's also speaking also to the elements of preventative maintenance that will also make contribute to unwarranted consequences. Next slide is a breakdown of the productive assets of all these indicators I spoke to Chairperson and honorable members in relation to reduction of private leases up until we get to the point of critical components and components of facilities that are assessed. Now that includes your boilers, the lifts, the heating, ventilation, aircons, and water systems that we're basically looking at various components within that. Next slide. Next slide is now the outcome on transformed built environment. We build this on three areas. One is we're first looking at how do we then use how do we then use our linking back to the outcome one of government when we talk about a developmental state, how we leverage on the government's muscle and legislation to improve the conditions of the society. So we first look at one, we bring in the aspect of expropriation and issues around the relevant acts within the organization and also broadly into the space that we operate in. And then secondly, we say the spin-offs of ensuring that there is a fertile environment which is legislated that then creates opportunities for majority of people to participate in that space. And at the same time, we're also looking at building a pipeline of skills that will then be regulated as well as a feeder to the economy so that we then provide the necessary skill for future infrastructure. And this is where we're working together with the professional services branch, working together with the schools, working together with the entities such as your CBE and the councils and the universities in terms of the entire value chain of the skills that will be required. And then that also links to that aspect we talked about of the sustainable infrastructure investment where we're also focusing on the skills that will be required for future infrastructure, particularly looking that we are now looking at NEP 2050 and infrastructure going forward. So this basically is the concentration or the concern, the participation, the focus on the transformed built environment. Next slide is a breakdown of this. Next slide. So next slide is a breakdown where we're looking at the number of beneficiaries participating in the pipeline, skills pipeline we talk about. Then we're also looking at also facilities that will be used as part of responding to the nation, to the national strategic priorities on properties that will be let out for GPVF purposes. We're also looking at awarding leases, and this is more of an empowerment component through our leasing portfolio to look at how we also address the skewness in the patterns of ownership, and particularly landlords. And also working together, we're looking at the Public Works Bill, where we'll then introduce it to Parliament, that will then deal with consolidating all the works of Public Works in that space of integrated planning, as well as also looking at the CIDP Amendment Act, next slide, as well as looking at the Infrastructure Act regulations, as well as submitting the amendments of the infrastructure to Cabinet in terms of establishing it as an entity, establishing it as an entity. So this is basically looking at the one, the legislative framework, two, looking at the skills pipeline, working with the councils, and then three, we leverage on our procurement to look at how we then deal, how we then contribute to maximum participation by designated groups to our procurement aspect of it. Next slide. The next slide then speaks to optimized job opportunities. This one then you'll see that the indicator is slightly changed where we used to measure work opportunities, and I think members will recall that we used to have a lot of issues there when it comes to public bodies and also taking the department taking on the challenges faced by public bodies into our audit issues. So we've had a serious a number of engagements with DPME, AG, National Treasury, a number of other stakeholders to deal with that. So now what's happening is that in terms of the 5 million target, Department Public Works will continue to manage and coordinate all these and provide the necessary technical support to all public bodies with an intention to maximize or to realize that 5 million target. So a report will be generated that will speak to the optimized job opportunities, and within those reports will then extract the number of work opportunities that would have been reported according to the EPWP reporting system. So these are some of the developments that we were able to engage with Treasury, DPME and AG on dealing with these issues. Next slide is the breakdown of these indicators basically. Now the last outcome is a dignified client experience. Thank you, Simon, on the slide. Our dignified client experience, Chair, is a three-pronged approach, basically looking at the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure as a trigger process to the client department, which is the second aspect, which then deals with the third aspect, which is the citizen. So that is the value chain we're looking at. We provide accommodation solutions to the client department that charges its mandate with a direct relation with the customers and the citizens. And the dignified client experience is underpinned by the Matupili principles. And we also have an SDIP, Service Delivery Improvement Plan, that also looks at the service delivery agreements, service delivery standards, and service delivery level agreements in relation to the our coordination and interaction with the client departments to ensure that what the citizens complain about to the second, to the client department, if it's related to the provision of accommodation, we're then able to act on it. If it's not related, but it's just the relationship between the two, then it's something else that that other department will have to do. So we're creating that loop and trying to deal with the issues of dignified client experience, but more so between ourselves as a department and the client department, we have one common goal to serve the citizen, and that is basically what it is. And through the state events, this is our prestigious portfolio. We're also looking at also the provision of movable assets in terms of conditional assessment, condition assessment of those assets, and we're also looking at preventative maintenance to ensure that our facilities are in a condition that will enable the client departments to operate in. So this basically is our 7 outcomes linked to all the priorities of government, linked to the national and annual strategic priorities that were endorsed by cabinet early this year, and as well as contributing to the broader national development plan 2024-2030. Next slide then speaks to general risks that we, next slide, this is just a breakdown, speaks to the risks, or before the risks, Chair, I think the Acting DG also, and Mr. Faisal, Chair Faisal also touched on the issues of bridges, is that we're also contributing to this. We have a total of, for 2022-23, total of 96 bridges that we'll be working on the Way Decision Program, and then it's broken down in terms of these provinces where you can actually find these bridges, and then we've got a quarterly breakdown on that. I think we'll also be reporting to you on how we are basically progressing in relation to these targets. Next slide. Now we have, again, we've taken our own departmental outcomes and developed the risk in relation to those outcomes. We have a top 12 strategic risk or an institution-wide risk ranging from cybersecurity. I think we have taken on board in relation to this issue, speaking to having to work remotely, and also I think we've also experienced at some stage Department of Justice where they also experienced cyber attacks. So we're working on systems to ensure that we control unwarranted traffic within our systems. We also talk of external shock and natural hazard as a risk. We responded to the COVID. We are also trying to put in response to any potential lockdowns that may arise as a result of the hard lockdown in China. And also looking at the disaster, the floods that is also affecting, because we've got regional offices spread across the country where some of them may not even have a way of getting to the offices. So we're also looking at that in terms of your business continuity, disaster recovery, evacuation. These are some of the mitigation plans that we're putting in place. Fraud and corruption, we're dealing with that. I think this has been heavy, taking also from the Section 195 of the Constitution, and also building on some of the elements that are coming up in terms of financial losses, as well as the Zondo Commission. We're also building all of this into the government space on dealing with fraud and corruption. Hence, we've got that ethics and fraud perception, right? But more so is also to deal with consequence management in the department where such would have been, or after investigation, such would then be acted upon. Perceived stakeholder interest and interference, because we are dealing with a lot of stakeholders, they may have different interests and influences into the process that may prolong the process. We're saying now we need to look at mechanism on how we manage that risk so that we put everyone into a common vision of what is intended. And then in terms of our sustainable, this relates to the component that I said, these are DPW infrastructure projects, and we've experienced a lot of project hijacks as a result of that misinterpretation of the 30% local procurement issue. So those are some of the issues. Next slide is the risk or that we face of infrastructure asset failure. I talk about the productive asset, the entire asset value chain. So this is where we are now putting a lot of controls to ensure that there is coordination, a well-coordinated machinery that then seeks to then address those weaknesses within the controls of the productive asset, project risk report, contingency plans, term contracts. And I think we've been dealing with also the issue of contract management that has also come in to ensure that we are also dealing with the issues, even from a procurement point of view, we're also dealing with issues such as projects that are shovel ready into our system. Possible collusion and fronting, we have brought in that as part of Transform because we are working with the councils. We're also working with the entities. We're also working with other various stakeholders outside the government machinery, like the civil society. So we also need to look at, when we're looking at procurement processes within the organization with an interest from the external parties, we also ensure that in us meeting that participation rate, in us also dealing with the skills pipeline, in us also dealing with empowerment, we also ensure that We adhere to the procurement regulations. We also strengthen the BBBEE and also good practice, and also put in empowerment policies that will then focus and direct our efforts towards that empowerment for their issues. Then the other ones is demand risk for designated groups. This is mainly basically, if you look at it again, is the balance between the targeted number of work opportunities vis-a-vis the actual, hence bringing in technical support awareness to ensure that public bodies are given the necessary support to then drive these public numbers and also report them on the system, and also ensure that they have the necessary resources, including budget, to actually drive this and maximize on the EPWP. Dignified client experience, we're dealing with a lot of reputational damage, and through SLAs, communicate. So you can see that our mitigation strategies are aligned to the business processes as well as some of the key performance indicators. Hence, we are also developing what we call the key risk indicators, driving the key performance indicators towards achieving our outcomes and objectives. So this is basically how we have structured it in response to the external and internal environment. Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. Back to you, Mr. Faisal and DG.
Please, Mr. CFO, to take over. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good morning, Chairperson, members of the Portfolio Committee, Minister, Acting DG, and colleagues. The budget is into two, it's the MDE. For the main vote, we have a total budget of 5 billion.
Can you look for another page or use another gadget? We can't hear you.
Is it better now? Chairperson?
In a new position.
Hello,
it's better. Please don't move from where you are.
Okay. No, thank you. Actually, I'm in the office. I was connected through my phone. I've switched to the network. But if it's not getting better, I might have to connect with my phone in case it's not improving.
It's better now. It's better now.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. I'm sorry about that. So the budget for the main vote is 8.5 billion, which is a slight increase compared to the previous financial year, which was 8.3 billion. Then in terms of the breakdown of the 8.5 billion for 2022-23 financial year, for administration, there is no significant change. It's just moved from 511 million to 512 million. Intergovernmental coordination, there is no increase. EPWP, there was a slight increase. It's 3 billion compared to 2.9 billion of the previous financial year. And the outer years, there are slight increases. Then property and construction industry policy and research, where our entities are funded through that program, It's 4.8 billion, which is also a slight increase of about 100 million if you compare to the previous financial year of 4.7 billion. Then the outer years, it's a slight increase. Then the last year of the MTF, there is a slight increase also, which moved to 5 billion. Then that's basically the breakdown of 8.5 billion. Then in terms of economic classification for the same budget, we have current payments, which is 1 billion, which is made up of compensation of employees, goods and services, and interest and rent on land. And there also, if you look at compensation of employees, there is a slight increase of 10 million, which is not that much. Then on goods and services, there is also a slight increase of about 19 million. Then if you look at the outer years also, it's just a slight increase for goods and services. Then for interest and rent on land, there is nothing. Then for transfers and subsidies, that's when the significant part of our budget goes to transfers and subsidies. For provinces and municipalities, we have 1.6 billion, which also is a slight increase if you compare to the previous financial year of 1.5 billion. Then departmental agencies and accounts, which our entities are funded through, it's 4.6 billion, which also is a slight increase if you compare to the previous financial year of 4.5 billion. Then for foreign government and international organization, it's a slight last increase there. Then for public cooperation and private enterprise, also it's a slight increase from 87 million to 90 million. Then for non-state institution, there is also a slight increase of about 28 million if you compare with the previous financial year. So it's sitting at 1 billion, and the outer years also there is a slight increase. Then those are the main amount for the transfers and subsidies, which gives you 7.4 billion if you compare with 7.2 billion of last year. So there was about a 200 million increase. Then for payment for capital assets, which is mainly your machinery and equipment, it's 20 million, which is a slight decrease if you compare to the previous financial year of 24 million. Then the total still is 8.5 billion. Then if you move to the next slide, please. Over the medium term, the department will continue to focus on creating work opportunities, providing better oversight, cooperation and service delivery, and facilitating skills development in the construction and property sectors, as Luazi has indicated in the objectives of the department. An estimated 87%, which is 22.7 billion of the department's budget over the period ahead, is allocated to transfers and subsidies for the operations of its entities and for conditional grants to provinces and municipalities for the implementation of the EPWP. An estimated 13%, which is 3.3 billion of the budget over the same period, is earmarked for spending on compensation of employees and goods and services. If you can move to the next slide. Thank you. So this is a breakdown of the transfers. As I said, 87% of the budget for the main vote goes to the transfers. You can then see the breakdown. We have property management trading entity, which is 4.4 billion, and the outer years, it remains almost the same. There is a sharp increase in the last year of the MTF, which is 4.6 billion. CITB, there is no increase. If you compare to 23-24, but the increase is on 24-25. So the current budget is 80 million. CBE, it's 54 million. With the outer year, there is no sharp increase except 24-25 financial year, which is 57 million. Common War Grave Commission, there is no increase with the outer years. It's sitting at 29 million. Parliamentary Villages Management Board, it's 11 million. Construction Education Training, it's just 662,000. Agrima is 33 million. Presidential Infrastructure Coordination Commission, which is it's known as ISA, it's 90 million. EPWP Integrated Grant for Municipalities is 778 million. There is a slight decrease in the outer year, which is 23-24 financial year, or a slight increase of is 781 million. Then 24-25, it's 816 million. Then for integrated grant for provinces, it's 433 million. For social sector incentive grant for provinces, it's 424 million. Then for non-state sector, it's 1 billion. So the total is 7.4 billion, which also in the outer year, 23-24 financial year, it's 7.4 billion. Then the last year of the MTF, it's 7.8 billion. If you can move to the next slide. Chad, can I hand over to Yonita to present the PMTE?
Good morning, Chairperson, members of the committee, Minister, DG. The PMT, I'm going to start with the revenue amounts. We are looking at 23.5 billion rand expected revenue for this financial year 2022-23. This basically remains the same over the MTF, except in the last year, where we are looking at a reduction, and this is mainly due to municipal services. We are doing currently municipal services as a recoverable, but we last year started devolving this function to the client departments, and they are taking responsibility themselves. So you will see that in the last year, municipal services recoverable, as well as the management fees on municipal services will zero out, and it will reduce in the next year. Next slide, please. Thank you. The top part of this slide is a breakdown per program to give you an indication of where most of our money is being spent. Of the 23.5 billion rand, 12.9 billion will be spent in or will be allocated and spent in the real estate management services branch. This is mainly because of the leases, the municipal services, the type of budgets that we deal with in that program. If we look at the economic classification, the current payments is 16.6 billion, which is a slight increase from the previous financial year, but this is also because of the change in municipal services recoverable, and this will go down through the medium term. Our transfer payments, as the entity, our transfer payments is property rights. A big portion of our budget goes to. This will be 1.7 billion in this financial year and will increase percentage-wise in the future, in the outer years of the MTF. In terms of capital payments, the total budget for this financial year is 5.1 billion, of which 1.5 or close to 1.6 billion is refurbishments. That will be capital expenditure on our own buildings of the PMTE. 2.5 billion is client capital. This is projects that we do on behalf of clients on a recoverable basis. We have machinery and equipment, which is a smaller amount in terms of the total capital expenditure. Machinery and then DPW infrastructure. This is part of the transfer that we receive from DPW. And this is money that is spent mostly on either DPW-specific properties or where we have multiple tenants like ports of entries and Dolomite risk management. So in total, our budget for this financial year, as indicated by the revenue breakdown, is 23.5 billion. It will go slightly down in the next year, and then it will go down to 20 billion in the third year. Thank you. I think you can go to the next slide, but it's already part of our discussion. Thank you very much. Thank you, DJ.
Thank you. Are we through? No other person is going to speak?
Yes, yes, Chairperson, if I can just make a few general comments.
Okay.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Honourable Chairperson, when I've made an assessment of the performance of the department to achieve our five-year MSDF targets, it is clear now already that we will be falling behind in reaching those targets. So I want to put it on the record, Chairperson, that we will come back to the committee in September when it's time to review our APP targets to increase some of the targets based on some of the systems that we've put in place. Just to give the committee an example, for instance, on outcome one, which is resilient, ethical, and a capable DPWI, we will come back in September and amend those targets because we have got 2 years left in the sixth administration to achieve those targets. But I'm also going to call on members of the portfolio committee through you, Chairperson. If there's any targets that they think we should increase, that they can recommend to us and we can make sure that we increase those targets. The second point, Chairperson, just in terms of the budget process. As you can see, the predictions for the budget go way out to 24-25 financial year. The change in procedure that we are doing this year is that before the month of June, the department, together with the executive authority, will then look at our budget and begin to make some trade-offs in the budget so that we can meet the targets set for the priorities of the Cabinet Lekgotla and also the priorities in terms of the seven key priorities of government, so that the budget is informed by the priorities that government wants to achieve in the sixth administration and not just the normal process. So that is a major change that's going to come in this year, that the budget be informed by the increased targets and the reprioritization of the budget so that we can meet the MSDF targets within the next two financial year. Just on the legislation, Chairperson, that's still outstanding. We have started the work on to start a process to look at the Public Works General Laws Amendment Bill. There are a number of old pieces of legislation that need to be repealed, and only Parliament can do so. And the repeal of this legislation is based on the recommendation of the South African Law Reform Commission report that came out in 2012, but some of these legislations have not been repealed. So we will also bring that to the committee in the current term of Parliament. Just also, Chairperson, on the rural bridges and the floods in KZN. Yes, we have set a target for, in terms of the State of the Nation SONA commitments by the President, that we need to build 96 bridges That is also going to change. In terms of the floods in KZN, we had visited there, the Deputy Minister and myself. The total need for bridges that has been destroyed by the floods, as identified by KZN province, is about 28 bridges. So far, we have been able to increase for this current financial year another 6 bridges that will be funded by the provincial government of KZN. So on Thursday this week, we will be going and handing over 3 bridges that have been completed together with the Department of Defense. But this is one of the priorities that we need to find some budgets for. And I will be engaging also with National Treasury so that many of the areas that were destroyed by the floods, that there are 4 municipalities where you don't have access at all. So that will also change, but we will keep the committee informed about any further resources that we're able to get to help the people of KZN. I still have to do a visit to the Eastern Cape that is also being affected by the floods. We have done a preliminary assessment there, and once we have completed our assessment together with the Department of Defense, we will be able to see what the needs are in terms of rural bridges within the Eastern Cape. So I just wanted to make those few comments, Chairperson, and then give over to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Minister, and your team for such a detailed explanation. I now invite honourable members to deliberate and engage on this report that has been given to us. Honourable Graham Murray, Honourable Hans Galvik, Honourable Hicklin, Honourable Tring, honourable members, please don't forget that when you are speaking, please show your face according to the new guidelines that have been given by Parliament. Honourable Matebula, you will be the last one according to the hands that are raised here.
Minister De Lille, you haven't muted. Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Minister De Lille, and thank you to the Department for the presentation. We only got the slides last night. So in the intervening period in preparation for today, I've actually gone through the full APP so that I can be adequately prepared for this. So I will be speaking more to the APP than I will be to the slides. So I hope that people have got copies of those in front of them. One of the things I picked up in the presentation by DDG Faisal was that the 3 buildings that have been identified for the refurbishment, operate and transfer program, one of those is Telkom Towers. I'm not sure if I heard that correctly, but I find it surprising that after the hundreds of millions of rands that have been spent on Telkom Towers, that still remains a building that requires refurbishment. So if I could just get clarity on that, please. On page 36 of the APP, the department lists its values, and those are professionalism, responsiveness, integrity, dependability, and efficiency. I'm certainly not going to impugn anyone's integrity today, but I'm very concerned about the lack of responsiveness of the department. In the last week, I have sent several inquiries to the new acting DG with respect to properties that are in trouble, where we've got residents that are under threat, and requested feedback on that, I haven't even had an acknowledgement of an email from the new acting DG. So I find that deeply disturbing. There are people whose lives are actually being threatened as a result of a property that is owned by the DPWI in Durban, Excelsior Court, which I have been trying to get resolved for over, since I started. And literally the Wonga gangs have moved into that building. I have raised it as a matter of urgency, and there's been not even an acknowledgement. So if we're going to be speaking about values, I think we need to be looking at adhering to those values. Then on page 50 of the APP, sorry, I just want to go there so I can speak to it properly. They talk about the devolution of the client departments, the devolution cycle of the client departments. And then they speak about the number of properties that are illegally occupied. So 48 buildings are illegally occupied out of the 2,029 unutilized buildings. Then there are another 1,029 other properties that are illegally occupied. So how is it working out that, you know, we're not able to actually look after the properties we own? And are there, I wanted to ask if there are any properties where we pay rent, in other words, properties that we are renting and paying for, which are unlawfully occupied, or are the buildings that are referenced only the buildings owned by the department? And then there are, it speaks to the 100% in terms of the revenue. So there are 10% that are other. 87% are itemized billing and 3% are the non-revenue generating, which I've just highlighted here, the 48 and the 1,029. But there's 10% where it says other. I'd like to know what that encompasses. Then on page 54, we speak to the PMTE. In 2016, the last review of the organogram was done. There's now a deficit of 2,034 posts and 600 vacancies. Surely it's high time that a review is done of this organogram, considering that we're just not coming right in terms of the skills assessment, the positions, the vacancies. And with Arcubus, this should have been a means towards the automation within the department. So with the new systems in place, if we're automating systems, surely that then means that we need to be reviewing who we have in departments and who's operational and who's no longer operational. And the same is with regards to the ICT system. Surely if we are bringing in better systems, we need to look at the kind of people that we need to be running in those offices. So I urgently request a review of the organogram along with the skills audit that's being done. Then in terms of this entire document, there are two pages given over to ESA, which I think it provides very, very little information with respect to what Infrastructure South Africa's role is. I mean, it's literally like a page, not even a whole page of information. We then speak to the DPWI spending. So they spent between 97 and 100% over the last 5 years. The PMTE has spent 82 to 93% over the last 5 years. Repairs and maintenance made up 28% of that spend. And bearing in mind that we hold the biggest property portfolio in the country, but we spent 59% of our budget on operating and leases. There's a big disjuncture between how much money we are spending on leases versus how much money we are spending looking after our own assets. We are literally paying other people to take care of their assets while we're neglecting ours. Then on page 59, there's just a query on page 59. The third paragraph, it speaks to the wrong financial year. Oh, yeah. Under the non-financial performance, it speaks to the department has put plans in place to improve performance in the 2021-22 financial year. I think that's just an error on that. And then on page 63, okay, so on page 63, you give targets there for the percentages of business process automation. And so the actual audited performance in 2021 was 100% business process automated. And then the next 3 years, it drops to 35%, 30%, and 60%. So I can't understand if it's already, if we've attained 100%, how we're now going backwards towards smaller percentages, unless that's also just an error. And then on page 64, again, the vacancy rate there, the annual target there is 11%, but we speak to a 10% normative target, which is outlined by the PSA. So why are we aiming for a target that isn't the norm? We're still aiming for 11% when we could be aiming for 10%. And then we set the target for EPWP on page 68. We've got targets for EPWP. Now, the EPWP has got 5 sub-programs. And there's one target. I can't understand why we have one KPI for 5 sub-programs in our EPWP. And also, why are we not bringing in other indicators? At this stage, it's all we are asking for is the progress reports. Now, that was slightly addressed in the presentation done. But at the end of the day, we should be getting better indicators of what EPWP is achieving, as opposed to just a progress report from the 290 organizations that use EPWP. Do we know the value of the projects that are being done, that are being undertaken? Are we looking at the exit strategy for EPWP? There's a construction site that I was at the other day, and they've got EPWP workers because it's a public works project. And some of their EPWP people have shown amazing initiatives, and as a result, they're being pulled out of the EPWP project, and they're being given job opportunities within the organization that is managing the project. Why are we not looking at doing more of that? And also, why are we not reporting? Because that, to me, is a successful EPWP intervention, because somebody has used EPWP as a stepping stone into a better career. So the girl I spoke to started off as an EPWP general worker and is now registering as a candidate she rep. So this is the sort of thing we should be doing in terms of EPWP, as opposed to just getting one KPI, which speaks to a progress report. So I think more can be done in terms of EPWP. And then page 77 on the Prestige project. So on the Prestige program, we've got two sub-programs. The one speaks to, obviously, the state functions, and the other one speaks to the Parliamentary Villages Management Board. The KPIs only speak to the state functions, and although the accommodation issues, and Parliament also falls under that, under the Prestige policy, although that is discussed in the comments, there are no actual targets or outcomes that are set. So the items listed on page 78 with respect to those projects, the audit of the national key points, the urgent servicing of fire management equipment, electronic asset management system, the unified standard SOPs, all of those should actually be KPIs instead of just comments on the APP. And there should be targets set with respect to timeframes for those to be done, what the outcomes are expected to be. So to have one KPI that speaks, well, four KPIs that speak to one of the sub-programs doesn't make sense to me in terms of the APP. Then on page 82, we speak to, this is the PMTE administration. There are a whole lot of things: effective governance, empowered human capital, accountable performance, and one KPI, which is spend money. So basically, for that entire management system, there are no measurables. The only measurable is that they spend their budget. Now, understandably, they have fallen well below their budget spend. But still, I mean, at the end of the day, the PMTE, we know the issues of, in terms of the operationalization, good Lord, operationalization of it. But that's because there are no actual proper KPIs there. So that is a concern. In terms of the productive assets on page 85, so again, they're wonderful things: integrated planning and coordination. We've got REMS, we've got facilities management. All these wonderful comments and recommendations with no deliverables or measurables for the outcomes of those things. So it doesn't help for us every year to come and hear the same stories about these are the things we want to put in place, but we're not measuring whether or not they're actually being put in place. Facilities management is not functioning. The UAMPSs, the user management plans, are not working. There's no incentive for client departments to maintain properties. There's no clear delineation between maintenance and repair and refurbishment. So they are getting away with not doing day-to-day maintenance because they may be saying it's a repair and refurbishment, and that falls within the domain of the department. And there are no measurables in terms of proactive maintenance. And there's inadequate budgeting for both. So we know that the client departments are not adequately budgeting for the maintenance of the properties that they are leasing. And we know that our department is not properly budgeting for that. And that's a huge issue. We have to find a way of not only incentivizing, but of being able to recoup money for when they are not meeting the requirements in terms of those UAMPs. And the same with the CAMPs. There's only one. On page 87, the target is one CAMP. Now, I just need clarification because maybe I don't understand how the CAMPs work. This is a client maintenance contract with us. So if they, do we have one per department or do we have one per property that a department uses? Because if it's one per property that a department uses, I can't understand how we are only doing one per year. Because what we're basically saying is that the client is responsible then for the maintenance. So who updates this? So if it's a client, it's one client, one, and it's for the whole client for all the properties that they hire from us. How often is that updated to list the properties? How many are there? Who is monitoring compliance? And how is compliance addressed and enforced? And I think that's really important. And this is why we've been speaking so much about the Public Works Bill, because hopefully the new Public Works Bill will give this department the powers of enforcement in terms of maintenance of properties that are being leased. So that's a huge thing. Construction project management on page 89. During the presentation, I noticed that under revenue, there's no income projected from construction management. And yet, there are a whole lot of outcomes in terms of the number of design solutions, number of projects completed, number of infrastructure projects completed. So there are five KPIs that are actually have indicators. I can't understand then why we're not getting any revenue for that work. So I just need clarity on that. The other thing is that it says under the construction management that the department works with IDPs and SDFs, with special development frameworks, with municipalities and provinces. But what about assessing existing buildings that we have and speaking to municipalities and client departments to address their needs through the remodeling of existing properties versus new builds? There are so many projects, there's so many properties that get reported to me. Every week I have new properties that are coming in that are DPWI properties that are standing empty, that are being vandalized, that are being illegally invaded. And it also comes back to ESA. And I've got a note later on, but I'll raise it here as well. Why is ESA only doing new builds? Somebody gave me a wonderful analogy over the weekend where they were saying that Barack Obama recently said, or at some point said, any man, it doesn't take creating a child to be a father. It's about raising a child. And I'm concerned that with ESA, ESA is the former. ESA is creating the child, but nobody's raising the child. So it doesn't help that we're just building new all the time and we're not maintaining existing and everything else is just falling to pieces while we're focusing on new. Surely at some point ESA can start looking at, through that RTOP project or ROTP project, or through other projects where we take existing buildings and we remodel and restructure those. All right, page 90, we also speak about acquiring an automated asset management system on page 90. And my question is, I thought Archibus was that. So why are we acquiring a new one? And then there's also, they speak about focusing on evaluating existing evaluation of infrastructure. I want to know why that is not being done ordinarily. And then they speak about operational plans when they focused on the output. Will we have access to the operational plans that they speak to on that? On the construction management, there are very good targets. But my question on those is, are those targets a percentage of total projects? In other words, if we're completing 125 within budget or on time, how many are not completed within budget or on time? And then also, given the new focus on infrastructure, as I've said, why are the targets for the new financial year lower than the actual targets achieved during the height of lockdown when we're speaking about infrastructure-led economic growth and development? Our targets are lower than what was actually achieved. Then, just in terms of...
Can you, honorable members, can you yes. just wrap it off? Remember, we still have other members that are to speak, and we have the House sitting at 12.
No problem. All right, so in terms of the National Infrastructure Management Strategy that's being reviewed from 2006, the targets are there, but they're very low. What about buildings that are identified as being extremely poor condition under facilities management? What is done with those? And then every year there's an underspend on the same items, particularly with respect to compensation of employees. And yet we keep increasing the budget amount. Can't we take that? If we're still aiming for an 11% vacancy rate, then surely we don't need to be increasing our spend on compensation of employees. Surely we can take some of that money and put that towards something like maintenance. And then finally, I think our goods and services includes repairs and maintenance and leases. What is the breakdown within this in terms of maintenance and repair and leases? There's 38.6 billion rand. And then under the risks, they speak about one of the risks is the lockup by landlords, and they give three mitigating things. I'd like to recommend that paying on time might be an excellent form of risk mitigation to prevent lockouts. But that's just on a lighter note. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
I'll proceed, Chairperson. Thank you very much. Good morning to our honourable... Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to Honourable Chairperson, our Minister, our members, the departmental staff, as well as our parliamentary staff. Chairperson, Honourable Graeme Marais raised a lot of issues which I wanted to touch on, so I'm not going to repeat many of the things that she already raised. But when we look at PMTE and we see Program 4, which relates to real estate management services, we see that according to the targets, their target is to let out 100 unused vacant state-owned properties. So I'm just wondering, Chairperson, what do they have a figure of the total of unused state-owned properties? But when we look at, I'm having a little bit of concern because something doesn't add up. Because when I look at DPWI in terms of departmental receipts, they speak about a decrease of 835,000 rand in letting of properties and official quarters and sale of land and buildings through PMTE. So I just need clarification in that regard, because it doesn't make sense to me if they want to improve the number of letting out of unused vacant state-owned properties, and they decrease on the revenue that they will receive. It doesn't add up in, for me. Then, Chairperson, when I look at the measures that they want to put in place in terms of unused vacant state-owned properties, which they want to make use for gender-based violence purposes. I welcome that initiative, but I'm just worried if they talk about letting out. Are they speaking about asking money or revenue for it, or are they making it free of charge available? If I can just get some clarity in terms of that, because we know it's a needy cause that we support, and we are thankful to the department for really taking up that issue. So I just need some clarity on that. On Program 6, Chairperson, with regards to facilities management services, I really welcome the 180 preventative maintenance contracts to reduce reactive maintenance, because this is an issue that we've been very vocal on throughout the past few years to say that we don't want them to look at reactive maintenance, but they should look at preventative maintenance. But I would just like to know if they have proper measures in place to ensure that that is not an area that end up being misused by service providers. So if we can just get an indication of that. Then in terms of goods and services, I see the consultants, business, and advisory services. There's an increase of a real percentage increase of 59.37%, Chairperson. So I would like some explanation in terms of this sharp increase, because as we can remember, we've also been vocal in terms of limiting consultative issues or consultants and rather focus on in-house people to do the work. So if they are talking about such a sharp increase, can we just get a clarification in that regard?
Honorable Hickley, Honorable Pascal Vick, are you true or it's the issue of network?
It looks
Honorable Pascal Vick. Okay, Honorable Hickley, over to you.
Thank you so much, Chair. Honourable Graeme Murray has picked up one or two things, but I looked at, thank you so much for the presentation to the gentleman who did the presentations. I looked at one or two of the issues, and Honourable Graeme Murray did cover very much of what I wanted to say. There was an opportunity where they were talking about water and sanitation on one of the programs, and it just led me to think how much of an opportunity that would leave the DPWI to actually punch Agrimar SA with their certified products with water and sanitation options. And I really think it's about time that we do need to make sure that South Africa's best kept secret is no longer South Africa's best kept secret. On facilities management, we actually need to start calling a spade a spade. There is no facilities management really in DPWI, and it's something that we really have to address. Minister, turning to the bridges project that's very, very in my mind, in the forefront of my mind, particularly in terms of what is going on with the floods in the in KwaZulu-Natal, the Welisizwe project, I'm exceptionally concerned about it, because it was originally going to be, as I understood, making use of the SANDF architects, if I understand correctly. And yet there was this strange press release that went out calling for pro bono assistance and pro bono help and calls for assistance in KwaZulu-Natal and the Eastern Cape that had BEPSA in all kinds of twists over the late last week, calling for pro bono assistance in a very, very haphazard manner. And it made me very worried, because If you are asking for people to build bridges and get involved on a pro bono basis in major infrastructure to assist with flooding, there has to be some kind of organizational structure that they can work with. And everybody is more than willing to get involved with assistance in KwaZulu-Natal, because what has happened in KwaZulu-Natal is a disaster of epic proportions. And I know that everybody will come with open arms and really and truly get involved on any level. But it really does need to be very, very structured so that there is no chance of confusion and there is no chance of a haphazard approach to it. And I'm appealing to you with everything and every part of my bones to say, please, can it be structured? Because that is really what we need. Again, I echo what Honourable Graham Murray said in terms of there are over 2,000 vacancies that we know of in the PMTE. Can we make sure that the compensation of employees underspend is taken, the money that is allocated for compensation of employees, that money that is underspent gets taken and reprioritized in a different direction, because we really have a problem. If you look at properties that are under the control and that are being used by user departments, let's look at the bomb disposal units in Colbain in Tshwane. That bomb disposal property is absolutely shocking. There are no windows. The grass on the actual property, whether it is for the maintenance of the client or whether it is for the maintenance of DPWI, stands up to my waist. These poor people have to go into that office every single solitary day. There are rats running around, rats the size of cats. The sewage often doesn't work. The plumbing doesn't work. There has to be some kind of agreement between, it's a DPWI facility. We need to facilitate that these people who do such dangerous work go into a building that actually works for them. They have to pay us rent and SAPS bomb disposal units that makes it welcoming for them to come to work in the morning and them willing to pay us on time for renting that space. I have written countless letters to the department to say, please guys, can we please assist them? Because that building is a shambles. And there are so many that I can actually list. We have to look at, again, leadership from DPWI to make sure that things that can be done from DPWI actually are done by DPWI so that we come out smelling of roses for our clients and that our clients then want to work with us instead of complain about us as DPWI, the department. And I will leave it there. Thank you so much, Chair, and thank you, Minister.
Thank you, Honourable Hickness. Honourable Tre.
Thank you, Chair. Appreciate also the presentations by the officials and the department. Greetings also to the Minister. Chair, I just have three questions. While we appreciate every job opportunity created, we must accept, and this is with regards to the EPWP, we must accept that most of these, I've heard 1 million and I've also heard up to 5 million job, we must accept that these job opportunities, whether it's 1 or 5 million, they have not translated into permanent, decent jobs. And this is where I believe we must partner with the private sector. As the President indicated earlier this year in his State of the Nation address. So we need to be able to be partnering with the private sector to upskill. I think, and the Honourable Graham Murray mentioned this as well, to upskill those who have EPWP or learnership opportunities. So upskilling them so that they are able to move to apprenticeships, helping them to become qualified, skilled part of the workforce, whether that be as artisans, technicians, engineers, or other professionals. So the simple question is, what is the department's plan in this regard? Is there a plan looking at upskilling those who have these job opportunities, many of them not being translated to decent and permanent jobs? The second question is with regards to the our immovable asset register. Now, in the 2020-21 BRRR, the report, it was noted that the immovable asset register was incomplete and that PMTE could not confirm a complete, accurate and valued recording of important items on its account, obviously with regards to the immovable asset register. Now, it is unacceptable that after 28 years of democracy in South Africa, we are still talking about the department is working with the provinces and we are working with municipalities to develop a comprehensive asset register. The Department of Public Works and Infrastructure is the largest property portfolio holder in the country. This is a competitive advantage that we have. And this advantage is not being maximized. And the result of that is that we have property for human settlements, possible human settlements, property for educational and economic development that is not being unlocked. When will this comprehensive asset register finally be ready? And then my final question is directed to the minister. Minister, you spoke about bridges that are going to be added to your targets that you already have. Now, I drove the other day between Gateway and Tongaat. It was about 2 or 3 days ago, just north of Durban. There are at least 3 bridges on the N2 that have been damaged. Now, obviously, there's far more, but these were just three bridges. Just between that short stretch, about a 20-minute drive, just north of Gateway, that have been damaged by the floods, resulting in traffic having to be diverted, 3 lanes converted to 1 lane, huge traffic congestion along just that short stretch of road on the N2. Now, this is an important economic corridor transport node in KwaZulu-Natal. So can the minister just please identify which bridges in KwaZulu-Natal have been added to the targets that she's mentioned? And what are the timelines for these bridges to be completed or repaired as each day, each week, each month that passes impacts negatively on the lives of our citizens as well as the economic development within the province. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Tring. I don't know whether Honourable Matebula is back now. If he is not, Honourable Siwisa.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
I'm sorry, it's my turn, sir.
Oh, okay. Okay, then Honourable Matebula followed by Honourable Siwisa.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm struggling with the network. I'm trying to be quick. I have still issues to raise today. Well, my apologies to start with. You said that we must open our videos. Unfortunately, the network where I am is very terrible. I think when I open the video, I think it will be much more terrible. So, Chair, one, I want to first of all raise the concern in relation to the issue of operational budget vis-a-vis the capital budget. When we look at the operational budget, it's worrying because it seems like it takes the big chunk of the total budget. I think it's around 60% or so. And that's what goes to capital budget. It's around 40%. So, which for me, it's a big one because we all know that a capital budget, we use it you know, to bring about service delivery and also to ensure that the economy, you know, grows that. Because you talk about projects, which also create, you know, job opportunities for our people who are unemployed. Now, if then we've got a big chunk that goes to operational budget, it's a big worry. I'm not so sure how does the department intend to reduce that or bring it below the percentage that it is now as we go for the next financial year and as we go for, you know, amending of, you know, or midterm budget. How are we actually intending to reduce that? That's one point, Chair. Well, the other point, Chair, is what has been raised by my colleague here in relation to asset register. The asset register, Chair, it leaves a lot to be desired. You know, for the mere fact that the asset register, you know, is incomplete, it tells you that there are some assets that we may not get to know about them. We are left with only 2 years in our term, and we're still struggling to get a comprehensive asset register. So I think that the department needs to thoroughly look at that and fix this particular matter. One last matter, Chair, is in relation to the issue of what the minister has raised. Well, the minister has spoken about the issue of bridges in KZN, I think, and also in Eastern Cape. But what is affected by the terrible weather that we have in the two provinces? You know, it was not only the issue of bridges, but there are other properties that were affected. You speak of schools here, you speak of, you know, hospitals, and other properties that are owned by government and also which are maintained by our department. Now, I just want to check as to when the minister mentions only the bridges, does it mean that we are only just going to focus on the bridges only and ignore other properties, even though they fall with this department? And lastly, sir, I just want to check in relation to the budget that is going to be used in addressing the issue of the damages as the result of the bad weather that we had. If the budget isn't going to be coming from the current budget, or are we having this money is going to be sourced to fix the damages that we have witnessed over the past few weeks? Thank you very much, sir.
Honorable Suisa, thank you. Honorable Matebula.
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, let me also welcome the presentation that was done today. I need to go to slide. Let me just get it. Slide 20, which speaks about number of design solutions, projects completed for this year, infrastructure projects and everything. Can we be provided with locations as to where all of these projects are going to happen? That is in slide 20. Now I have a problem, Chair, with unutilized buildings that are being used, that are not in use. We have a department that has got the buildings that are not being utilized, and yet they are renting out buildings for sister departments to use, which is a big problem to me. It seems as if we are working backwards. We have unutilized buildings, and then we are renting buildings to give to the sister departments, and then we are leasing out buildings to private companies. And I don't know how logic is that. I still have a problem with that, Chair, and I've been talking about this for the past 2 years, if I'm not mistaken. Going to slide 23-24, buildings to be utilized for GBVF purposes. How soon is this going to happen, and in which provinces is this going to happen, specifically municipalities? Because at present, as we know, Northern Cape does not have any facility which is even a shelter for women who are being abused or children that can be utilized. We also always refer cases to the Free State if the need arises. And then also on those two slides, the triple BEE, how many women-headed companies, youth-headed people with disabilities will be considered for what has been mentioned about the BEEE. And then we go to the issue of the bridges, the 96 bridges that need to be built, that the department says is going to be built. And I ask myself, because we've got Agrima SA that has innovative ways, and I think now is the time, Minister, that we must get value for our money, and Agrima SA must come on board and give us solutions as to how we can build sustainable bridges across, especially what's specific to the floods that happened in the KZN, and also with Eastern Cape also still having a crisis where a few weeks ago we saw people crossing a river being transported in drums. So it's time that Agrima SA minister gives us value for money, because every financial year they have been given money to give us innovative ways. And I think it's about time that now you sit down with all of these departments, Department of Transport, Department of Housing, to make sure that we actually use the innovative ways of Agrima SA. And then last year we were told about the maintenance plan that is going to be executed, or departments or people are going to be assisted into coming up with maintenance plans. How far is the process, and can we also get a report based on that? Coming to KZN and Eastern Cape specifically, and with the floods that have been happening, is these APPs not going to, are the floods not going to affect your APPs for 2022, 2023, Minister? Taking into consideration, you've got schools that have been damaged, we've got public buildings that have been damaged, we've got roads that need to be reconstructed. Are these APPs going to change, or if then the need arises? Because the president said, and even you yourself said, that you are in KZN to do an oversight as to the extent of the damage. So how are these APPs going to change at the later stage, taking into consideration those issues that I've raised? Those are my only questions, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Suwisa. Just a few comments for me, not necessarily questions, if there is no... Oh, apologies, Honorable Shabalala. I didn't see your hand. Apologies, Honorable Member. Honorable Shabalala.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm not sure about the video, but if it will not... if it will not disturb me. Thank you, Chairperson. I've been covered by some of my colleagues, but I wish to welcome the presentation and also wish to appreciate the visit by the minister in KZN. And one was glued on TV because it was like a dream, when it was like a nightmare when you see this catastrophic flood. I am partly a resident in Durban, and I was locked in Ladysmith, and I didn't know how to get to my house. I didn't know what was happening. Of course, I do have a slight damage, but some of the areas that I saw in dire strait were areas that I serviced. in the last 20 years when I was in Durban, and it was very heartbreaking. When I listened to the minister at that particular time, I was wondering how July unrest have impacted on them. Are there any effects on the department with the buildings? And how much are the damages on these floods? What is the effect in our own infrastructure, like the departmental offices? I know that some hospitals and some offices have been affected, but I'm not sure about our DPW own infrastructure. I also need to understand, through the minister's assessment, to what extent is the department going to be involved? What is the intervention? At what cost? Chairperson, there is something else that I've been always following. I know that there's been a summit that was headed by the president on litigations. I haven't heard us talking about that. I haven't heard us, to what extent is it affecting the department, and to at what cost? Maybe it could be because it's under legal. It will be a discussion for another day, because one will also be interested. How much are we paying? At what cost are we servicing the legal representation and so forth? There is a total of 1 billion that has been mentioned here, and part of the items were the goods and services, then the I can't remember the other or the other one has to do with employees, and then I can't remember the third one, but I was wondering what is the breakdown of this 1 billion. Maybe I missed some of the presentation because I had a problem with the network. Chairperson, another thing is that I was following the presentation by the CFO. What is the rationale behind the high incremental on the it's slightly, or maybe I can say it's a sharp increase. What is the rationale behind that? And also, I think we'll be failing ourselves if we were not to try and emphasize the issue of work opportunities and job creation. Is it incremental if the department, or is it stagnant? And I'm not sure whether when we talk about the job creation, are we only going to focus ourselves on the EPWP only? And I also had a question. I was curious, in fact, during the flood in KZN, I was wondering, where are the EPWPs? What role are they playing? I was just wondering. But I realized, Chairperson, that if we don't diversify the issue of EPWP, like one of my colleagues have indicated, that we cannot just be slammed into one position to say they are doing what they are doing now, but it's not even skilling them at any point. Chairperson, the issue of vacancies, I think one will become it's something that we've been repeating, and I think that will also impact on the outcome of the report as we close the sixth term administration. We will close it on a very negative note of having to have had the under expenditure because of the vacancies. I think the department can do better. I think for now, Chairperson, I really appreciate the opportunity. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Shabalala. As I indicated earlier, Minister and your team, just a few comments from me. Honorable Shabalala, can you... Okay. I wanted to... Yeah, thank you. Mute your mic. Minister, the issue of telecom towers, I think it's a black dot on your performance. We came in 2019, you had telecom towers and you were promised that within 6 months that that building will be occupied. It's now 2022. In next year we'll be hearing the same thing, and that year your term in office, just like all of us, will be over, and you had not addressed the issue of telecom towers. So I think to me it is crucial that as a person steering this ship of public works and infrastructure, you ensure that before the term ends, that building is occupied. I don't want that. I remember when we were told about Botasgau in Mthatha, and I've been there several times. It's bad, Minister. If you can go there, it's bad. It's so bad. It's so bad. I think even in other provinces it's like that. Two, Minister, the issue of the parliamentary villages. I'm raising this as much as it has not been picked up or highlighted in the we raised an issue of the prefects that have asbestos roof. It can't be this government that agreed when the court ruling was laid out saying that it is wrong to have any asbestos roof. It can't be this department, it can't be this government. Then it continues to let people stay in those houses. We were informed again in 2020, just before we went for lockdown, that a project is going to start, and we went there to visit, only to find that the project was not about demolishing those temporal prefabs. It was about renovating the buildings and the houses that are already built in bricks and mortar. We even said you can use the new innovations that are done by Agrima SA. We have seen them in ensuring that there are new buildings. I hope that is on the pipeline, or at least it may be started. But before the end of this term, again, Minister, at least something has been started on that one. I understand, Minister, that there are new developments. We see them in papers, but unfortunately we don't get anything from you. We heard that the former DG has been brought back. We don't know. We have a new acting DG. The acting DG that was there is no longer acting DG. Is now back in his position as the DDG. We would really appreciate to be informed what is really happening in terms of management in this department that you are leading. But in many cases,
the issue of the immovable asset register. I don't even want to talk about that one. It is really frustrating. We will always blame that our audit opinions are not positive. But we know that there are things that have not been done in the department to ensure that it is very clear that this is on now. It is not on. Please, Minister, you have indicated in your remarks that you are left with only a few months, if we can say months, not say years, because if we say years, it's as if there's still time. We don't have time. And I think honorable members will also raise this issue. We raised it when we came in. The issue of the small harbour, especially the issue of Port St. John's. I thought even that one, it would be something that, Minister, when the term ends, it's something that you would say we have started. We really appreciate the prompt response of the department, especially you and the Deputy Minister going to KZN on what has happened there. We were so proud to see that even this department is amongst the departments that immediately went to KZN. When we had that challenge that affected the entire country, we are also looking forward to seeing you in Port St. John's again in Eastern Cape, addressing issues there that have been caused by the floods. Thank you, Minister. Over to you and your team.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, honourable members. Chairperson, what I will do immediately is to send to yourself and the committee our progress report on our visit to KZN and the floods there. I was accompanied by the Deputy Minister and all DPWI entities, CBE, CIDB, all of them. We took two representatives from each one of them, including ISA. We then had, together with the municipality, with the Metropolitan and the KZN Public Works and Human Settlements Department, we put together various work streams. And in the report that I'm sending you right now, you will see the update on the work streams. So the first work stream that we had to deal with was the Durban Air Force Base. That we visited and was completely flooded with mud. So you will see the progress that we are making there so that they could use some of the aircraft inside. We've worked together with the commander there to help them to clean up. And then the progress report will give you the dates by what we have done. The second work stream, Honourable Chairperson, was around damaged assets, government assets. There were 49 government assets identified, buildings, and also the KZN Museum. Again, the breakdown there was, buildings belonging to SAPS, to Arts and Culture, to the Department of Defense and the Department of Justice. And again, with CBE and all the professionals that joined us, we could start assessments immediately. In terms of land parcels that we had to identify to resettle some of the communities from the low-lying areas, we as DPWI, we identified 616 land parcels, but we had to verify the suitability of those 616 land parcels. We found after having assessed the geotech test together with the Housing Development Agency that only 258 land parcels that we've identified was suitable for resettlement. Over and above the 258, provincial government of KZN has also identified 193 land parcels by the province that could also be used for resettlement. We are still waiting for the Metro of Etiquini
to do the same exercise and also add available land from the metropolitan that can be used for resettlement. And then we had a fourth work stream. This is the question asked by Honorable Hicklin. The assignment of both environmental professionals from our entities. Now, the Deputy Minister and myself met with the entities. We said, look, this is a disaster. You are funded by government. How can you bring in some help to put together multidisciplinary professional teams that can help us to do the assessments of the buildings and the assessment of the damage? We have achieved that. And that is where the issue of pro bono was discussed. Now, what we've learned with the issue of pro bono is that there are certain levels of maybe with the assessment that the building professionals can do pro bono. But when it comes to design of assets, there the issue of accountability comes in. An engineer will have to sign off on the design of that asset. And there is where pro bono work stops. We also have got a number of private sector companies that have offered their help in terms of skills. And we then decided that it's best that we bring all of this help together. And the Deputy Minister is chairing that committee together with ISA, so that we make sure that we utilize all the skills that are available. There are a number of municipalities, at least four municipalities, where we were not able to get access to, but we were able to get the multidisciplinary teams to go in there to go and assist the municipalities just to do the assessment. So we are coordinating it, Honorable Hicklin, so that we make sure the issue of accountability stays there. And this linked me to the question of Honorable Sawisa about the budget. National Treasury has made 1 billion rand available. It's certainly not enough, but there is a procedure that has been put in place by National Treasury for departments that need extra funding, like in the case of the extra rural bridges. We have made an application to Treasury to release some of that money for extra bridges. So there was a question, is I think Honorable Tring, as to where the extra six bridges will be built. And remember that the bridges were identified by the municipalities and by the province. So the extra six, there are three in the municipality in Mkumbatini, three, and then we've got another one in municipality of Indwedwe, and then another two in Ilembe. That is identified according to the municipalities, but we also have got the names of the villages where it is going to be built, and also the districts, because we're also applying the district development model with the bridges. Agrima SA is on board. We have relied on the Department of Defense in the past to do the assessments of the sizes of the bridges, and with Agrima, we have introduced them to the MEC for Human Settlements and Public Works to show what alternative building methodologies they have that is being approved by the South African Bureau of Standards. So Agrima is involved full time now, and we found in some instances that, you know, government departments did not know about this facility in Public Works. But I'm very proud to say that they are fully on board, and even the DM and myself
when we look at the portfolio and what they offer and what they can do, in terms of innovation, there is a lot that can be done. So, Chairperson, I'm sending through the KZN report now. We've just sent it through to you and to the committee. If I can just turn to other questions that were asked. In terms of the GBVF centers and the progress that we are making, as you know, the first two provinces that benefited from this was Gauteng 6 buildings and also the Western Cape 6 buildings. We have now identified a further 83 buildings. All of them were visited together with officials from the Department of Social Development. I've now set up a meeting next week. I'm meeting with Minister Zulu because we now have to look at the funding, the operational cost of these centers. As Public Works, what we have sorted out is the renovation and the repairs of these facilities. And we are going to sign a memorandum of agreement with the Department of Justice that's only also going to release some of the trained inmates to help us with this project. So far, the Department of Social Development have confirmed out of the 83, there are 26 that is definitely suitable. And the process of looking at the balance is ongoing. But we have got a target to at least build one GBVF center in each of the 44 districts. And where the Department of Public Works don't have buildings in all of the districts, we called on the provinces and also the municipalities to release some of that facility. Then there was another question around the EPWP and training to make EPWP participants employable. Now, the EPWP fund does not include training. So we source funding from the National Skills Fund, that is in the Department of Higher Education, and we have secured funding for 8,300 participants for training. And the breakdown is in that artisan development program. We will be doing 400 learnerships, 450, and then accredited skills program, 7,000, and then capacity building initiatives, another 450. So the programs where we are directly involved is the Bukopile Learnership Program, which trains contractors to implement infrastructure labor-intensive projects. And I have been asked a question by Honorable Shabalala, which I am in the process of answering. So the rest of the breakdown, Honorable Members will be able to see in that answer. If I could come to, I've dealt with the bridges. I want to deal with the issue of automation and to automate. When I said earlier on to the committee, that we are coming back to you with the review targets of the APP in September. That was exactly one. The same point raised, how can we go backwards to 30%? Honorable Members also raised the issue of Archibus. Archibus, 8 modules have been implemented, but only 3 activated. And I will repeat what I said the last time. My struggle is with the resistance to technology in this department. To an extent now that I have asked in February already, let us test the market. Let us go out for requests for information to see what digital systems are in the market. excuse after excuse. 2 months later, the RFI did not go out. When I made a follow-up, we then decided now that we, and I had a meeting with the acting DG, that we are now going to go out for a request for proposals to digitize the immovable asset register. I have seen now our experience in KZN when we wanted to turn to the immovable asset register, how difficult it is to get correct information from the asset register. So I hopefully, I have given instructions that they must make sure that the tender or the request for proposals go out as soon as possible so that we can digitize the immovable asset register as soon as possible. It will help us with our new program of refurbish, operate and transfer to identify buildings from the immovable asset register using digital and technology. So I am just concerned as a committee about the immovable asset register, but hopefully we have found a lasting a solution. Then on the issue of the EPWP, and then Honorable Shabalala raised the issue of the litigation workshop. I attended the litigation workshop myself the Friday and the Saturday, and it was very informative. After that workshop, the Minister of Justice has now issued a guideline framework as to how, as government departments, we can utilize, how we should use litigation. Because governments spend billions on litigation, and sometimes we defend the indefensible when we know for a fact that government is going to lose the case. So that new framework is available. If the committee can source it directly from the Department of Justice, or I can certainly help to send my copy to you. Honorable Chairperson, you raised the issue of Telkom Towers. Yes, Telkom Towers started way back in 2014, I think. And finally, on Telkom Tower number one that the committee visited in 2019, the police has started to occupy, all floors are now occupied as of the 2nd of May. So the other two Telkom Towers that was not done, that was supposed to be part of this project, that we already spent billions on. Because of the experience with Telkom Towers number one, that it took 10 years to complete it, we were considering taking Telkom Towers number two and number three to make it as part of the new project, which is refurbish, operate and transfer. That was another question asked by one of the members, and that is where Telkom Towers comes in, Telkom Towers 2 and 3. So we've got the, and I can send also the floor space, it's occupied by the police, all the floors are right up to floor number 25. And I agree with you, it's an indictment that we were not able to do this much quicker. The work was done by an implementing agency. And that is why we need to tighten our contractual obligation with implementing agencies. In this case, the implementing agency was a DBSA. And so you find that you paid all the money over, there's overruns in the projects, it's overtime, and therefore I have suggested that when we enter into agreements with an implementing agency, whether it's DBSA or IDT or KUGA, that we need to strengthen our contract management to ensure that we don't have another telecom towers. But I can assure you there are a couple more that is in the state of telecom towers. On the parliamentary villages, I'm sure that the department will answer there. There is just one last general comment that I wanted to make on the leases. The leases, like I said many times before, we have got leases worth 4.5 billion rand that is in dispute. And the 99% of the dispute, or 90% of the dispute, is overpayment. And we are overcharged by the private sector. There is a guideline as to what the cost per square meter it is. And in 2019 already we had agreed that this is what government can afford to pay and must pay. And so we started renegotiating these leases. And that is why when it came to the end of December 2021 and we've not finalized the process and we were still finding month-to-month leases, and the Auditor General said to us that month-to-month leases is irregular expenditure. We put a stop to month-to-month leases in December of 2021. And we are now in the process of regularizing all of those leases, but still they want to overcharge government. And that is where we ended up in court now. And in court, the decision of the Honorable Judge was that we need to continue those ones on a month-to-month basis for 3 months, and then it will stop. So we're busy renegotiating all of those leases, Honorable Members. And that is, if we can get the leases right, it will lead to an unqualified audit. The leases is the cause of this department receiving a qualified audit year after year after year, because it later on become acceptable to receive a qualified audit without dealing with the leases. So we are dealing with the leases, and again, Honorable Chairperson, I will offer to come and give you an update of how far we are with the leases, and hopefully we have also submitted to the Auditor General a roadmap to an unqualified audit and GPWI. And there we are assisted by the Audit Committee, but we keep on getting repeat findings by the Audit Committee, which the systems in the department is not able to detect and prevent. But as we were saying, that is all work in progress. I think I want to make those general comments, and then I will come in if there's anything that I might have left off. But I thank the Honourable Members for their questions, and we will be continue. We want to be held accountable. We want to be held accountable to the committee for the work that we are supposed to be doing. And just the last question by the Honorable Chairperson about the change in Director General. We had DDG of Government and Risk Department, which deals with the APPs, which deals with investigations, the Anti-Corruption Forum, which deals with disciplinary processes. And since we had moved Mr. Imtiaz Faisal into acting a DG position, we started running into serious backlogs with in-government and risk. And I want Mr. Faisal to go and fix that for us, because again, you will see it going to be reflected in the annual reports of the department, where especially our anti-corruption unit has done very little work, if any. And then there's also a finding by the Auditor General on some of the investigations that we have not started, and that is the function of the governance and the risk unit. And so the acting director general now in the department is Mr. Alec Moemi. He's been a DG for 10 years in the Department of Transport, and he is now assisting us. In terms of what happened to the former DG, that has been dealt with by the presidency. The presidency now, the minister in the presidency, Minister Gugumbele, he is driving the process. It's not driven by Public Works, even though you see some of these media statements or making a reference to myself as the minister. It's not being dealt with by Public Works. It's dealt with by the presidency. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I'll give over to the department to answer some of the detailed questions raised by the members. Thank you.
May I come in, Chair?
Yes, you may. Honourable Hicklin, is this a new hand or a legacy hand? And Honourable
No, Chair, it's a new hand. The Minister didn't answer my question regarding the SAPS bomb disposal unit.
Oh, okay. Honourable Trink, is it a new hand or a legacy hand?
Legacy, I'm going to take it down. Thanks, Chair.
Okay. Thank you. Honourable Hicklin, the Minister has also referred some of the questions to the department led by the acting DG. Let's hear them, and then if they have not responded to your question, we then pose the question again. Thank you. Over to you, yes. Tim.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, thank you. May I request your indulgence because my network is also a bit poor and I would want to maximize the bandwidth by not putting on the video if the Chair so agrees. Chair, I wish to note the concerns raised by Honourable Graham Murray in as far as the matter of the targets in the APP that are not indicative, as she does point out. I believe that in that part she shares the same views with our minister. And as our minister had already indicated in advance that we would ourselves seek to also review some of the targets in the APP. And when the time is opportune to engage with the committee around such reviewal process, a number of things will obviously trigger the need to reevaluate where we are, inclusive of the factors Minister has pointed out, the cabinet Lokgotla outcomes, as well as the midterm review process that we would have to undertake. And equally, even in this regard, to also consider the changes to the budget as it will be impacted by the national disaster or the state of disaster declared in KwaZulu-Natal. With that said and done, we would take those to heart and note them. When the review process does occur, that those matters that have been indicated as being quite important, but yet it doesn't appear that we're measuring them, to consider measuring those. I also wish to address the other issues raised by honorable members. And in this regard, I wish to touch on the issue of the letting out imbalance that Honorable Graham Murray points out to. I think this is key. In the last 10 years, I believe we should acknowledge that the operationalization of the PMTE has not necessarily taken foothold to arrive at where we should be. Consequently, Honorable Member, you are correct. You would realize that we are actually on letting in, spending quite a sizable amount of money. And we had spent almost 5.3 billion in renting private sector buildings. And the concern is spot on that we need to invest more in our own portfolio and utilize more of our own portfolio. But also where we are utilizing our own portfolio.
DG, can you please switch on your video? The Parliamentary Services have requested that that you must switch on. Only when you have a challenge of network, but you must always try to do that.
I have now, Honorable Chair. Am I audible?
Yes, you are. Please continue.
Oh, okay. So as I was saying, Chair, the issue will be that we then look at the letting out strategy. We haven't necessarily went into deep detail about this. Minister has directed that we immediately issue 100 or so of the buildings and also profile a further 100 properties with a viewpoint of searching these assets. We view now this as the core business of what the PMTE ought to be and where the PMTE should actually, the space it should play in. So even where we have previously let out our properties, we haven't really made a significant impact, bringing in the region of about 80 million a year or so, which is a far cry from what we are letting out. And therefore, that imbalance has been identified, and Minister has directed that the PMTE be restructured and that in its restructuring process, we operationalize it as a lean, mean entity, small trading entity that will take up these properties and the property space and run it with the necessary skill sets that are required to achieve this objective. I now need to touch on the issue again that has been raised. I wish to confirm what Minister says about the immovable asset register. I think Minister has succinctly captured that very well. Of import in this regard is the fact that we have already made progress in this regard, and very soon we would start digitizing the asset register. So I think that this is the process we are involved in, and we have encapsulated this as part of our targets that we will indeed begin the process of profiling this register, but even more important to actually digitize it during the course of this financial year. I wish to also address the issue of the imbalance on the operational budget and the capital expenditure budget. And I think that the minister's directive around the PMTE, which takes a significant chunk of the budget of the department, that if the PMTE is indeed restructured, it will follow suit that the restructuring of the budget for which PMTE is currently quite operationally heavy in terms of this. And no wonder the budget structure remains what it is at about 60%, 40% stroke, whereas the reverse should have been a better position to be sitting in. And therefore, we will append this and fix it to and attach it to the process of restructuring of the PMTE in this regard. I believe that I have touched on what other key things. I would hand over to my colleagues in REMS, DDG Makuvele, to respond to the issue of the buildings that have been raised by Honorable Hicklin, as well as what has been raised by Honorable Mare, Graham Mare. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chairperson, Honorable Members, and DG and colleagues. I'm not sure if my video is showing. Let me just switch it off.
We can see and hear.
clearly.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I don't have the feedback. Apologies, Chairperson. I don't have the feedback, so I'm not sure if I can be seen yet. I just wanted to respond on the matter that was raised by Honourable Graham Murray on the Ex-Celestial Court, and perhaps that by apologising that I have not seen the emails, but we will be on the lookout for the emails and see what were the issues. But as early as last week, the team in Durban Regional Offices had a meeting with the SAPS there, where the SAPS has actually taken over the building and they will be responsible for its safe buildings because they have, its safeguarding, because they've got plans for that building, and any queries should be sent to them. And that was the message that was given to our colleagues there from SAPS in Durban. And then another question that came, I think Minister attempted to the GBV part of the question, but it came from Honourable Van Schalkwyk regarding the number of unused properties. The total number that we were targeting as a department was just under 1,200. But however, when we're supposed to then go out on tender, we understand that we may not necessarily take all of them out at the same time, because obviously administratively it might be a huge burden. And the 100 properties that we have indicated there is just the phase one of the project. Mm-hmm. And another exercise that we're undertaking is to actually do a verification of those properties, because some of the properties are said to be vacant, and when you go on site to verify, you find that there could be some activity. So that is the exercise that we're going on, and the 100 is just the initial target that we're working on. I'm trying to check what was the other question, but I think mine was basically on the unused properties. Okay. The follow-up on Honourable Sanskrit was that, why is the revenue decreasing if we're going to advertise more properties? I think that could be an error. We just need to verify that with our colleagues. But revenue should be increasing as we advertise more properties for investment purposes. Thank you, DG. I think I've picked up the questions that were related to REMS. If I've missed anything, kindly assist. Thank you so much.
Chair, perhaps we should now invite finance to respond to the finance related questions, if we can allow the CFO.
Thank you, Acting DG. Chairperson, my network is not stable. You will guide me if I have to switch off my video. The first question that I thought I must comment on is the one where it was mentioned that CPM, we did not indicate projected revenue. I must indicate on infrastructure budget, it's mainly on recovery costs from the client. So it's not necessary that we charge revenue out of that. It's just a recovery cost. Then on letting out where it was indicated that the revenue is decreasing, actually it's not decreasing. It is increasing at 8% based on the targets that were indicated by REMS. And so it is increasing, although at not at a high percentage, it's increasing by 8%, which is aligned to the targets that was mentioned by REMS. The breakdown on budget, I think the Honourable Member indicated that she didn't get the presentation on time, hence she relied on the actual document. Actually, the breakdown is indicated in the presentation. Then the next issue was on the compensation of employees, to say why are we not using the budget for other programs. It's a discussion that I think we'll have internally in the department, but I must mention the nature of work that we do. Sometimes if you want to fill a position, somehow it's not filled. I'll make an example in finance. I've been trying to fill a position of a chief director. The recommended candidate declined. So when somebody declined a position, you don't know at a time when you start a year, you only become aware as you fill the position. So it's difficult to move money out of compensation because the project that we do, they are multi-year. The branches want to fill positions. Somehow you are unable to fill positions, but it's a discussion that we'll have internally in the department when the need arises to consider that. Then there was an issue also on operational budget vis-a-vis infrastructure budget. I think the acting DG has covered most of the comments then, but I need to highlight when you are running a portfolio of properties, you will have operational costs like your scheduled maintenance, your day-to-day maintenance, which are significant. You will also have rate and taxes, which is also a significant line item. So there are costs that are unavoidable in terms of operational cost of the facility, like in any facility, like your municipal account and so on. So I thought, let me also highlight that, but we'll also consider in certain areas where infrastructure budget must increase where the need arises. The other one, there was also a comment about the increase on the overall budget. Actually, if you look at the budgets of both PMTE and DPWI, which is the main vote, there is not really a sharp increase. The overall increase for PMTE, I think it's 4.5%, the overall increase. So it's not necessarily a sharp increase. Yes, in certain line items, one may see an increase. For instance, in leases, there might be a sharp increase there and there, but it's because of the leases that we have, and that is a cost recovery. As soon as the process of renegotiation is concluded, we use the active leases to project the budget. So that's what happens. Then the other question, I think it was on consultants. I'll allow Aaron Mazibuko to comment on consultants.
Thanks, CFO. Good afternoon, Chairperson. And members of the portfolio committee and colleagues. Chairperson, there were two questions that are relating to the budget that were asked. And the first one, maybe if I can try to, because there is a relationship between the items that are being spent on and the programs. Now, the first one, it was in relation to 1 billion that was indicated as an expenditure. Now, in the presentation, we indicated that 84% of the budget of the department is under transfers and subsidies. The 1 billion that is referred to is for goods and services, with 581 allocated for compensation of employees and 499 allocated for goods and services. This relates to 22-23 financial year. Now, under goods and services, and under compensation of employees, the program with the highest budget or the programs with the highest budget is mainly Program 1 and Program 3. Program 1 is administration with the budget of 290, and Program 3, EPWP, with the budget of 183 million. Now, for goods and services, the same programs, they are the highest in terms of the budget for goods and services, the same as compensation of employees. Goods and services for Program 1 for 22-23 financial year is 211 and 205 million allocated for EPWP, which is Program 3. So those are the two programs where the bulk of the 1 billion is allocated. Now, these programs, this is where the bulk of the employees are, which is Program 1 and Program 3. Now, with regard to consultants, what I've done, I've checked the spending for the consultants, and over, I think, 6 years, if one includes a medium term, for 2019-20, the budget was 27 million. The expenditure was 27 million. For 2021 financial year, this is the period where we had COVID, the expenditure was 17 million. For 21-22 financial year, which is the year under review, the budget was 38 million. million, and the expenditure as at the end of 31st March, it's 32 million. The same as the two programs where I indicated that the bulk of the budget is sitting. In terms of 21-22 financial year, we have 18 million allocated for program one, which is your administration, and the bulk of the budget is sitting under corporate services, mainly under ICT. ICT, it is a shared service for both DPW and PMTA. For those services where you cannot appoint employees, let's say maybe it's a new system that is being implemented where they will need consultants, then the budget will be under goods and services and it will be under ICT for either DPW or PMT, and the bulk of the budget it will be for the PMTA. Now, the other expenditure that we have under consultants, it will be going to program three, which is EPWP, where they need support for the implementation of their programs, either in the provinces or the NPOs or in the municipalities. For the same financial year, which is 21-22 financial year, EPWP spent 4 million. Then we also have 10 million that is spent under program four, and the bulk of the expenditure here relates to two branches. The first one, it is ESA, and the second one, it is the policy units. The same as program one, these are the expenditure that relate to the functions that cannot be implemented through the departmental employees, where some of them for a short term, so instead of appointing people, then you will be using the consultants. Now for 22-23 financial year, the budget is 43 million, which is an increase of 5 million from 38 million that I have indicated that it was budgeted for 21-22 financial year. And for 23-24 financial year, the budget is the same, remain at 43 million. There is a slight increase for 24-25 financial year, where the budget it will be increasing to 45 million. Thank you, Chairperson.
Sasa, can you please respond to Kemp?
Very much, DG Business, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, Minister. The questions raised by Honourable Graham Marais in terms of the user asset management plans. Yes, the user asset management plan contains the strategic requirements from the users, which is very important for the department to have to plan accordingly, especially in terms of large infrastructure projects, as well as in terms of prioritizing maintenance and refurbishment of buildings. It also has to look at the disposal plans of the users, as well as any new acquisitions that we need to acquire for the users. And also the users are responsible to develop a high level condition assessment in terms of the user's perception that also supports then the prioritization of maintenance. So it's very important for the users, like indicated by the Honourable Member, for the users to submit user asset management plans. This also then supports the development of a custodian asset management plan. Now, historically, we've been getting user asset management plans from some users, but they're not complete and it requires more intensive work to be done by the users. Now, the custodian asset management plan, yes, it's true, we produce one to the National Treasury, but it constitutes the 44 CAMP chapters, which then responds to the users that submit the user AMPs, and even those that don't submit because they are in occupation of state buildings or lease facilities. So we develop the custodian asset management CAMP chapters in around that. So that's what intrinsically happens. But also in terms of the compliance as well as to monitoring, it's got to be done by the National Treasury because ideally the user asset management plan and the custodian asset management plan in terms of their configuration and their purpose was supposed to be also utilized as bidding documents and that could be done in advance or we submit in advance so that the budgets for the next year could then accordingly be put together. by National Treasury for the various users, including the Department of Public Works. So yes, and if I also then can also indicate that yes, we require a digitization and an enhancement to the movable asset register, but also I think a lot of work has been gotten into getting all of the buildings and the land parcels that are owned by DPW into the existing immovable asset register. That is the focus. And this gets then tested by utilizing the deep download that I've historically indicated. We match against that and also link that accordingly to the audit report. Put my video on. And link that accordingly to the audited general report that we received, where in terms of ownership, in terms of rights and obligations, in terms of valuations, we have received this financial, the financial year that passed, 2021, a positive audit outcome. Although I want to agree with members, historically, this was not the case. So I'll pause there. Thank you very much.
Chair, thank you. I believe we have answered all questions.
No, not all at UDT. Maybe there's one or two that we still need to respond if the chair allow me.
Yes.
Thank you, Chair. The one thing I would like to respond to, although it was a by the way question, relates to the expenditure in relation to litigation cases or legal cases. And I can indicate that by the end of March this year, we had spent 24 million in respect of different aspects of litigation. It will include court cases. It will include legal opinions. It will also include the disciplinary hearings that were held and supported by the Office of the State Attorney as well, insofar as that is concerned. That will be the expenditure. And by April beginning, for the month of April, we had spent almost about 300,000 up to so far, insofar as the legal expenditure is concerned. That would be my response insofar as that is concerned. Coming to the aspect in relation to the APP, on page 63, that the Honorable Graham Murray had indicated and also the Honorable Higley at some point, it relates to the annual target that has been set, firstly for the ICT. If you note from the first column where it says output, you will see that it says ICT architecture to enable modernization of system. Now, the 100%, what it has missed out there, which I think it was merely to summarize that aspect of the output, was the word ICT architecture. So that 100% was the finalization of that architecture, which then informed going forward the percentage of automation against that particular architecture. So this year, it was then 35%, then it moved to 30%. But the overall, by the end of the period, which is the end of the strategic plan itself, will then be 100% of the implementation of that full ICT architecture in terms of automation. That is the in relation to that aspect. The second part, in relation to the norms we use to determine vacancy rate, those are norms, yes, set by the DPSA, the principal department insofar as HR functions are concerned. However, members will remember when they came on board in 2019 and even before that, but in 2019 in particular, our vacancy rate were even higher, far from that national norm. And there's a lot of work that you needed to do to move gradually towards that 10%. And I can tell you now, honorable members, we are on track in moving towards that particular target of 10%. Because if we were to note that the target that we have moved from were even higher than 11%, we're at some point around 16%. That was the baseline from which we moved in order to be able to reach that 10% eventually. So our objective is that for the duration of the strategic, of this current strategic plan period, we will have reached that 10%. Even if earlier than that, it will then be a bonus in that regard. The issue of review and reconfiguration of the organizational structure of the department is something that Minister from time to time looks into. And clearly, we all know that it is informed by the public service prescripts, which then allocates the delegated authority to the EA, executive authority, to do so. Minister has done so because the three segments of public works, which is the main vote and the property portfolio in the form of the PMTE, and on the other side, it is the infrastructure piece that we got since 2019 and managed by ESA. The structure of ESA is new. We have just reconfigured it and had it processed and approved by both the DPSA and the National Treasury in 2020. However, that structure in itself could be regarded as a kickstart structure as well, because there is a lot of work that we still need to do to determine the final configuration of ESA, whether it remains being a structure within DPW or a standalone structure in the form of an entity and so on. So that is the kind of work that we still need to be done. And that work is being undertaken by ESA to begin to look into that reconfiguration. On the property portfolio side, the minister has already assigned the acting DG to begin to look into the property portfolio and how best to reconfigure it so that it becomes an integral part of the department in the first instance, but also begin to achieve the kind of milestone it was originally set to achieve. That is insofar as the review is concerned. And then the one point also I wanted to mention is that insofar as the challenges around the film of vacancies are concerned, broadly and overall, it may have been a major challenge in the recent past. But I think Minister has actually put clear interventions in place. On the 4th of February, she has made it very clear that between February and the middle of June, we must have made sure that all the resultant vacancies or existing vacancies are all filled. As we speak now, we have 643 vacancies, which I will break out as follows. 127 of those have already been processed by each individual unit, who will then submit the necessary to enable us to advertise. 32 of those within that total of 643 are awaiting advertisement. They've been submitted to the various agencies. For instance, it could be either DPSA or, as Minister has directed, through the GCIS for advertisement. And those awaiting job evaluation results, in other words, those posts have not been advertised, but awaiting job evaluation, ensure that it is appropriately configured and job evaluated so that they can then be advertised. There are about 35. And I will only capture the big numbers. I will leave the small numbers like managing the process while the advert is still running is about 6. But the capturing, once the advert has been closed, that is currently underway, is about 13. Awaiting approval, panel approval, because you cannot start shortlisting and interviewing unless the delegated authority has given the necessary approval. For all SMSs, the delegation lies with the minister. For below SMSs, for deputy directors, the delegation lies with the acting DG. And the assistant director, the delegation lies with the DG Corporate Services. So those will be about 58 of those that are awaiting approval. And those that are awaiting shortlisting, meaning the panel has been approved. All that needs to happen now is for the date for the shortlisting to be set. There are about 21. And the shortlisted ones, meaning the shortlist has been done, one up, awaiting for the date for the interviews. For those ones, they'll be about 9. And awaiting appointment approval. In other words, we've completed the shortlisting, we've completed the interviews, and now we've prepared the submission for approval. There'll be 32. And those then that are awaiting security screening and verification of qualification, there'll be about 71. And those where offers have been made and issued, there are about 2. And then assumption of duty, in other words, the candidate have accepted the offer, has given notice wherever he is, if he's from outside the department, to have a date of assumption, there are about 44. And those that are filled, candidate, in other words, they've assumed duty, and their process has been captured on the personal system, there are about 68. And those that are affected by grievances, disputes around the recruitment processes and therefore suspended for filling, there are about 4. And the re-advertisement ones, where no suitable candidates, as the CFO earlier indicated, there are about 15. And those that have requested that they must fill the position through transfers, there are about 4. And those that want to reprioritize and said, no, we don't want securities anymore. We think there's a need around the FM function. So that reprioritization has also happened. There is about 4. And those that were abolished, there are about 5. And those that have gone the route of headhunting, there are about 3. That when I add up the whole total number of those vacancies. Now, of those, between February and now, we fill about 285, which are SMS positions, which include SMS position, and those below SMS, below it, which will be about 243, and 21 will be those that are above, that are SMS. And those that are still to be advertised from that number, in other words, included a non-requisition form submitted, will be about 75. So that will be the picture then. But the pointed issue that is very interesting as well is that the bigger bulk of some of those vacancies that are filled, they are mostly also filled in by internal candidates, which in essence is almost like there's been no movement or impact on the vacancy rate, because if, for argument's sake, I've been a deputy director, I've been appointed as a director, which means my salary movement will only be between the difference between whatever notch I have as a deputy director to that of the director. So it will not be the full salary of the deputy director that can then be utilized in order to close that vacancy. So at the same time, my deputy director position will also be vacant as a result. So those are some of the challenges that we've had. But the other last part I want to mention, besides attrition due to results of people passing on, but also people resigning and others retiring, there's also a huge number of those that also impacts on our vacancy rate insofar as that's concerned. In closing, I still want to repeat that the challenges around the vacancy rate are actually going to be a thing of the past. If you were to look at the amount of work done between the pronouncement by the minister on the 4th of February and today, in respect of how far we've been able to move out into the media, to the DPSA process, to advertise position. But also going forward, we're going to reach a point where we'll have very fewer positions that may not have been advertised, but also that will be those that are arising from resulted vacancies. In other words, from internal promotions or from those that exit the system. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. I think we could invite the Minister, Chair, to wrap up for us.
Yes, I think there are one or two questions, Acting DG, like the asbestos roof that was raised by the Chairperson that must still be answered. I just want to raise two additional points on the issue of vacancies. I have reported previously to the committee that we have invoked the services of DPSA to assign a team to Public Works to come and do a skills audit for us, to look at our standard operating procedures, to look at our employment equity. Many of these posts come through, honorable members, still with male successful candidates. Our employment equity, we've got 58% males in this department. And then to reach the employment equity target, I sometimes have to send it back to them so that they can get the message loud and clear that we must comply with the employment equity. So DPSA has assigned a team that is now in the department since Monday last week under the leadership of Mr. Johan Nell, that is now helping us to get our HR department to function optimal. Just a second point in terms of maintenance, there is provision that the departments can do some of their own maintenance without waiting for Public Works
to the value of 100,000. That 100,000 has been increased by Treasury to 1 million rand, where departments can do their own maintenance up to that value. So far, we have signed agreements with the Department of Justice and Correctional Services, the Department of Sport, Arts and Culture, Home Affairs, just to name a few, to do some of the maintenance themselves. And I do just want to ask the department that as an administrative issue, so they must just write to all the DGs and inform them about this facility up to 1 million rand to do their own maintenance. Because Public Works has shown that we are not, we don't have the capacity, but we're also not capable of dealing with the maintenance, and the request for maintenance and repairs has almost tripled in the last financial year, showing us that the asset lifespan, the older building is, the more maintenance you are going to require. And I will make sure that we inform all the other departments about this facility. And then lastly, I will commit to the committee that we will look at reducing the budget for consultants. 4 million rand for EPWP alone on consultants could be spent on providing job opportunities for more beneficiaries. So we will certainly have to look at this. And then, Chairperson, I was supposed to be in a meeting at 1 o'clock, and it has started already, and I will doubt your, ask your indulgence to release me so that I can join that meeting with the Minister and in the Presidency. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Minister, and your team. I think you have indicated that there are questions that have not been answered, but we have to prepare for the meeting that is sitting at 2. I understand you also have a meeting that is starting now. In fact, it has already started. You may be excused. But but the acting DG and the team will still be here. We hope to receive the responses of the questions that we have not received, at least by Monday, through e-return responses. Okay. But also, Acting DG, we welcome you in this committee. We do our work as this portfolio committee, that of oversighting the department. We ask difficult questions. We applaud and sinqome apho nenzeka kuhle khona, sigxeke apho nenzeka kubi khona, but we're not personal when we're doing our work. You are welcome. We hope that we will work well with you up to the time that a DG will be appointed in this department. We hope that we won't go to 2024 without a DG having been formally appointed in this department. We really appreciated the work that the former acting DG did and working with all of us, providing responses and information when we needed information. We hope that you will follow in his footsteps. Honorable members, again, thank you for your robust contribution and deliberations in this today's meeting when we were dealing with the department and PMTE. Tomorrow we'll be dealing with other entities. I hope that you will be there. Thank you again, honorable members. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you.
Recording stopped.